Welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting, the budget work session for February 21st, 2024. We start by standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You're starting?
Yep. Mr. Chair, members of the board, so originally we were supposed to do CIP and department reviews, but since the schedule got compressed, we're just going to do CIP reviews. And then during some of the budget time, we'll have department heads there, so if there's any requests that weren't funded in my budget, you can certainly ask questions at that time. But I think just to get moving with having the hour that we have, we'll jump right into CIP review here. Just give me a second for it to pull up, and we'll just kind of go down the lines. So, let's see here. Okay, so I think what we can do is, you know, so under each one of these sections, we can have those individuals come up that represent the CIP requests. Again, I'll go through the requests that were submitted for the current fiscal year, and I'll discuss the ones that were or were not funded or partially funded. And then if you have any questions of the individual members of the CIP request, you can certainly ask those. And then certainly if you have any questions about any of the out-year requests as well, you can ask those. We'll have Mr. Spitzer come up first. So for fiscal year 25, Mr. Spitzer requested, which I did not fund in my budget, $75,500 for two concrete slabs under pole barn structures at the park. And then he requested $180,000 for the Pleasant Grove baseball and softball fields, athletic field fencing. So Mr. Spitzer, I'll let you describe your requests and any questions.
The fencing is actually for all Carriage Brook and Pleasant Grove.
Okay.
Except for the soccer field fence, which would be brand new in 3 weeks, I think, or 4 weeks. But it's to flip the fence around, to put the poles on the outside to make it safer, and to fix some of the fencing, but we'll be able to save some fencing. And it's to finish the softball field over here, to make a true field and not just have the ball go into the outfield or the makeshift.
The portable fence.
Yeah, the portable fence. Because I will be putting up scoreboards here and there within the next month and a half for the kids to use.
And then you want to talk about your concrete slabs.
The concrete slabs is just to help. It's just so there's not gravel under there. I mean, it gets rain and it gets nasty. Sometimes people use it. It's just easier to maintain.
At Pleasant Grove?
Yes. Yeah. And that was a request from Ms. Booker at one time. That she wanted to see something like that out there. So that's where that came from. I'm not against the gravel. But I think we need to do the fences because they're buckling under at a lot of places, and I'm using rebar to hold them down, so it's not safe.
That's just something else for kids.
It's just not, it needs to be done. So that'd be my request, to try to get the fences done right and get them all done at the same time.
And you know, some of the fencing, that's still out here for
it is, long. Some of that. So we might be able to use that to run along the fence line. Because it would go from the dugout, I think, 8 feet to 6 feet.
Right.
Kind of like we do at Pleasant Grove.
Yeah.
So it's a step down. Depends on where you're at. So some of it we can use, some we can't. And that's pretty new, so we won't touch the backstops.
Anything you can put up down the first baseline. I've been at a ball field and seen a child get hit by a ball. Somebody over through first base.
Yeah, so it's... The lines are usually 8 feet, and then it goes down to 6 feet when you get past to the outfield. It'll go down to 6 feet all the way around.
I'm pretty sure that's what's out here.
It's close.
Yeah.
But here? Over here it's 4 feet. Baseball's 4 feet. But it's 8 feet to the dirt, and then it goes to 4 feet all the way around the outfield. But I think it's 8 feet from the dugout to the dirt.
When the GSL did the backstop, we have the fencing out there for it to go from 8 to 6, I think, to 8 to 6.
And it never made it, yeah. So I just want to complete that project.
6 to 4, I think.
And it would be better than having that breakaway fence that everybody complains about all the time out there. So a couple gates are bad, stuff like that. So.
And then just a couple of the requests that he has in kind of the next year. Again, he's got, is that one multi-purpose shelter for the $150,000?
Probably.
And then he's got Pleasant Grove basketball and tennis courts. And
that'd be more important with the pickleball requests that I've been getting in emails. I'm sure y'all do too, because I asked them to let y'all know, not just me. Because I can't do anything without y'all. But yeah, that would probably be at near the top, probably before the new shelter next year, if we would do something like that. It'd be my recommendation. It'd be multi-use.
It's a conversation for next year, of course, but in a certain, you know, there was a small group that actively got together and said, we want to, you know, want to appeal to them for this. And I just wonder, with things like pickleball courts, I mean, how many things can we keep adding that serve small groups of people? And
but it's multi-purpose, because they'd be tennis courts too, so it's not just pickleball. I'm not going to make small pickleball courts. I'm going to make pickleball and tennis courts.
Yeah.
I mean, I would make just pickleball courts.
Yeah.
The lake doesn't have them. We wouldn't have them. You know what I'm saying?
The lake's doing exactly that, aren't they?
Huh?
I think the lake's doing exactly that.
Yeah. They may be.
But the people that requested them were in Sycamore Square, so in areas outside the lake. So unless they purchased an associate membership, they wouldn't have that access.
Right.
But we're trying to build all. And outdoor basketball courts, we need those. We don't. We have a couple. I mean, they're blacktop, they're rough. So. That's what that's for.
But yeah, but I funded the 180 for the baseball and softball field fencing in my budget.
But that's needed.
Yeah. Any further questions for Mr. Spitzer and his requests, or any other requests that we didn't discuss? Any of the out years again? Some of those requests are in the out years. Those are larger dollar items. The swimming pool, multi-generational center. Again, those have been. Just kind of pushing down the line.
I will say one thing as far as some of the big projects, and I don't know if this would be a possible use, but I know that we were part of the deal we made with Dominion was $500,000 to go towards a big project somewhere. Now
that's for the board to determine. Well,
I think we could do that at Pleasant Grove, couldn't we? Use that for putting in the water, additional fields.
I don't think it could be for water. I mean, it's for
additional fields or something.
Yeah, it's for rec amenities or green infrastructure. I mean, again, you could have that anywhere in the county. It's up to the board. You know, some of the discussion is because of the impacts of the Fork Union District. Should the money be used in that area or should it be used at Pleasant Grove? Again, the language is written so broadly that. It's up to the board's decision where they want those funds.
I mean, that's one of those things. Yeah, we can use it wherever we want, but that is the Fork Union District. Pleasant Grove is the Fork Union District now. I mean, that's with our new redistricting.
Yeah. And I you're exactly right. It is in the Fork Union District, but someone there, I would say that's not what we would consider Fork Union proper out there. And those proffers came, you know. That's a board discussion. And Eric and I were to meet the other day where that sort of came up a little bit. And I certainly would be an advocate of making sure that some, if not all, of that goes to, you know, that particular area, if you will. But that's a conversation for another day. But
yeah, again, until Dominion gets their permits for the landfill from the state, that's what we're waiting on before that money gets released. I mean,
well, when you think of just Carysbrook, I mean. The thing that the community's gotten behind the most, or not the community, the thing that seemed to grab the most traction in that was the conversations about possibly doing something behind the Lions Club field here as a access to the river, and all in the context of the people in kind of this side of the county, that community being able to have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's virtually within sight of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's pickleball. These courts right over here. Is that still out there?
Outside?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can't play pickleball on those courts. They're cracked. The asphalt, they would need to be re-asphalted.
I mean, re-coated. resealed or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know if you can play pickleball on asphalt because of the wiffle ball type ball hitting the little rocks. It might throw it sideways. I don't know if it has to be
just
a smooth
work on
surface.
Your reflexes.
I like the balls moving that
way. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I don't know because of the smooth surface. I don't know because
them little babies on TV do really good with
it. They were. I like that commercial. That's cute.
I'll say too, and it's sort of in its infancy, but someone from FUMA that does their grants reached out, and they're looking to raise some money to fix their tennis courts out there, and they reached out about a possible MOU where we could open up if we did some pickleball courts out there. That's far off and probably not something we should even discuss tonight. But
pickleball courts where?
At FUMA that would be open to the public, just to provide another option. So that's kind of something that's been discussed as well.
And I don't think you can do them at the schools because of VHL cell rules. You probably can't have them on tennis courts for sanctioned high school sports. Would be my guess. You're probably not able
former
to do them
tennis
at the
courts,
school.
Though, we might be able to put some down. On former tennis courts at the middle
maybe,
school.
Maybe, yeah, but at on the current ones they play, play, I don't think that they can make them multi-purpose because of VHSL rules. Because of the lines. You have to be able to clearly see the lines of the courts.
Correct, at the high school.
Yes.
But what I'm talking about is
the old high school.
We have a blacktop at the old high school that sits right between.
It's got a basketball court on it right now, I think.
It's got basketball goal.
Goal on it, yeah.
It's just got bad. It's recessed.
Yep.
It's not used for anything, but now I'm just sitting here thinking.
And it's a smooth surface.
It's a rough shape, too, right?
I mean, we'd have to have it resurfaced, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just saying it's currently a rough shape.
But that's why it's a need for kind of the park. I mean, you can't have them everywhere.
Football has a different height net, too. You have to have a different net than a tennis net.
Yeah, but they adjust the tennis nets down. Okay. You can release them a little bit so they're a little bit lower.
What's awful next year anyway, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Or portable nets, you know.
They just lower the real nets. You can lower them a little bit with the crank. That's what they do at the lake and stuff when they play.
Just places where we have blacktop or whatever that we can possibly multi-use those things.
Yep.
Any further questions for Mr. Spitzer?
No, sir.
Mr. Hickman, would you come on down?
Thank you. Next contestant.
Yep. Next up is for Public Works. So again, out of their projects, again, funded capital reserve fund. Did not fund Public Works major equipment, funded convenience center, did not fund a new Pleasant Grove bathroom. Again, I think we need to look at infrastructure at Pleasant Grove Park before we do another
have a great bathroom,
another amenity that needs infrastructure. HVAC for the Performing Arts Building was funded. Fence around the Public Works maintenance shop back behind here was included. Historic courthouse restoration not included. Community center generator, Miss Debbie Smith submitted that. That one was included. Social services vehicles included and county vehicles were not included. So I guess, do you want to talk about the convenience center or anything that you think that I didn't fund that should be on this list?
Well, the one you did fund was the fencing here at Carysbrook. We right now are getting the site surveyed to install a fence around the perimeter, at least where we're going to put our new maintenance shop up.
Right.
So that's going to be a great plus when we get that funded. Out of the convenience center, I think all of y'all know that we need upgrades out there, and this could be the year to do that. We have a lot of phone calls on the paving of the entrance out there. You know, we've done some improvements, signage out there, and different upgrades, but we need to put some substantial money out there for upgrades.
Question I had is the $250,000 in the capital reserve maintenance fund enough to cover all the maintenance costs that you incur in a year?
Yes, I think it is. We have a reserve at this point in there. I think this will add to it.
I think we're up almost to $450,000 to $500,000 still
for this fiscal year.
Still
left behind.
Current. Yeah, it's intended for what doesn't get used, it rolls over, and then, you know, at some point a bigger project is gonna hit and take
right.
it down. So some years we had higher balances and now it's kind of whittled down a little bit more, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a few big projects coming up. We roof on the gym right now is going to be one article that comes up. It's a pretty substantial amount.
On the gym here?
Yes.
So it means the total right now is 498. Okay, and then
748, okay. I just didn't want a big expense to come up and then we have to dip into the reserves or raise the taxes.
That's why we've kind of left it there to have him, so that he has some wiggle room, I guess is the best way to put it.
I asked about that with the roof. Somebody sent me a video, I think last weekend, a parent of every time, like every couple plays, there was a parent that was running out with a rag and wiping up the drip that was coming from the...
That is correct. There have been a few places that have failed on the roof. It's an old roof. We've had multiple contractors come out and use just some piecemeal work to carry us through. But we're in the process now of getting the contract in place, working with our county attorney.
And the one thing is, too, there was money in the CIP for flooring, too, in there. And so I think we might want to look at the roof before we look at the flooring in there.
Correct, because we're having an issue at the school, middle school right now. We had a hot water pipe bust open, leak on the floor, and boogered up the floor in a couple spots. So that may be another capital reserve thing we're looking at from them.
Yeah, because there's nails coming up on the floor in there. I was in there less than a month ago.
In here?
Next door, yes. And there's places where you can see where boards have nails missing and the board's loose.
That'd be a bad thing to draw a charge and fall down.
And fall on a nail, yes.
Yeah, so Mr. Hickman, is there anything else that I didn't fund that you feel the need to advocate for?
You know, the historic courthouse is something I've brought up through the years, and you know, we've really got the ball rolling now to start that work. You know, we just put out an RFP for the architect that we're going to use on that for the next 5 years, which will give us some continuity whether you or me are here or not. At least we'll have some continuity going through with the architect, what work needs to be done. I would like to see that continually funded each year, because next year, if we don't fund it this year, it's going to come up to $1.3 million for the next phase. And I think we should fund part of that this year as we go into phase two. Phase one will not take very long once the architect gets in place. And I can't remember, $200,000 or $400,000. And we'd have that money set aside. But that's going to delay us a whole year if we don't have the money for phase two. And it's just going to sit there. And I think once we lose our momentum, we're not going to be in a good spot.
I could be remembering wrong, but I thought you said something to the extent in the past month or so that maybe I'm remembering wrong, that was because of the time that has taken, that we wouldn't get to that money.
I think you heard that from me.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you heard that from me, is that I didn't feel that by the time we get, I think we've got about probably $800,000 to $900,000 outstanding of funding for the project. And some of that was for engineering and work. And we got some of the, it's about $300,000 from the state. My thinking was, just due to the price of this and by the time it takes to get going, I mean, so we've got an architect that we're getting ready to get on board, but as slow as things have been going, I mean, I think having all that in place and getting it done by 25, I would be surprised if we would be able to get all that done.
What's the earliest the money could be put to use in your mind?
I think that's why I didn't fund it in this year's budget. I figured for fiscal year 26.
Well, maybe that's a better question for you. What?
25, that means July of 25. That would be, from right now, 15, 16 months away. I think we're going to be well into phase two before that time.
I will say this one thing about this. If it comes up to where we have to do it, we have a nice savings account right now that we can pay this if we had to out of pocket.
Yeah, I think
out of the general fund and not knock the general fund down very much. Yeah. I mean, we still have 7 or 8 million.
Well, I think if it happens quicker and then we can start using the money and
I think we can go ahead and do this.
Yeah, it's a matter of semantics. I mean, it's either if we're going to do that, then we're going to do that. If it's not changing tax rate because we're proposing to take this out of fund balance anyhow. So it's sort of a line item of whether you put 400,000 here. leave 800,000 or 900,000 on the other lot, it's pretty much semantics at that point. Either we'll use it or we won't use it. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying we can make that decision. That decision doesn't have to be made right now.
No, I'm just saying it wouldn't matter what the way.
It doesn't matter what you, I guess you're right. It doesn't matter, but if you're thinking about putting it into some kind of, if there's interest rates drop, and we go back to your saying of, we can borrow it for cheaper than we can pay cash, but we can't do that right now.
Excuse me, real quickly, Kelly, the front doors are locked, just so you know.
Got it.
any further questions on those? Not all. Ms. Smith, come up and talk about the community center generator.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing you want to add? Calvin, you want to add anything on any of the other projects?
I think we're setting pretty good with the major equipment. That's why that didn't get funded, and also vehicles. So I think over the past few years, you all funded that thing, put those accounts very wisely, and I think we're in good shape.
Thank you.
Ms. Smith, you can come on down. And the one thing is, so we put in there for a community center generator, so you can go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, so there's $150,000 to put the community center completely on a generator, the whole building, which would give us, right now the county only has the high school to be able to use on a generator for shelter purposes. This gives us a smaller optional area to use, especially if we don't need, like winter storm Frida, we had two people that needed shelter overnight. It would have been much cheaper to open, say, the community center than the whole high school. Or what happens if your one shelter gets taken out in the storm and now you don't have a shelter? We have a backup. But we have great news on this. So do you. Cool. So the state has a grant just for this, and we have applied for this grant. The highest we can ask is 67%, which is $94,470. Which the state would fund, and then ours is about 45, 46 that would come out of ours. And we will know if we got that grant beginning to middle of April.
So we originally put in for the 150 because, again, we didn't know about the grant. And literally, I think it was the day after I submitted my budget proposal, an email came through from VDEM about this grant. And so Ms. Smith, you know, reached out to VDEM and applied for it immediately. And they were kind of putting in a big call out because I guess they had
$2.5 million set aside for this, and we are the third county.
And they only had two requests. Wow. So far, so yeah. We jumped on it.
How'd you find out about that?
VDEM.
They sent an email out.
Question. This is not a county-owned building, but it's where we vote, and we also have opened it up before as a shelter, the community center.
I thought we owned that building.
Yeah,
which one?
The community center.
Fort Union. I'm talking about Kent Stewart. I'm talking about Kent Stewart.
Oh, okay.
The ARC.
The ARC hall.
I mean, we would have to ask. I would assume that, I would imagine it would have to be, with it being from FEMA, I would imagine it would have to be a county owned.
That's the reason I asked that, because it's just another one that's on another end of the county. It would be definitely worth looking into.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can definitely ask. I mean, I think
all they can do is tell us no.
Is the grant still open?
No, it closed February 15th.
Yeah.
Well, next year.
Well, maybe they'll reopen it if not that many people did it. $2.5 million sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, but they indicated that we had a pretty good
county
of getting that, since we're the only third one that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, unless somebody's putting in all the big requests.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, so that's for the community center generator. Any further questions? And again, certainly everyone knows that part of the county we get a lot of outages, and certainly Kent Store too. But we even get a lot of outages in the summer there, just with
squirrel decides to commit suicide.
Yeah.
An acorn bolt or something.
Next up, we'll have public safety. Will the sheriff come up, or if you want Captain Hurd? And so for the sheriff, he requested vehicles. He requested a mobile incident command center, and then flew in a courts upgrade. Again, for the sheriff's vehicles, he requested 411 and some change. which equated to 7 vehicles. I basically funded, which was the equivalent of 4 out of the 7. I did not fund the mobile incident command vehicle, but I did propose to for the Fluvanna Courts security upgrade. So,
okay, thank you. It looks like it's going to be a tough one, but we can do without that command vehicle for this year. But we have the, currently we have the trailer is our command vehicle, and it's been an end of life. So we'll throw that back in again next year. But we do need the 7 vehicles. There's a vehicle shortage in the state. We're lucky, you know, we don't know even what we can get. We're averaging, I think, in there is like 42.5 for the vehicle and about 16.9 and some change for the equipment to go in it. And we're putting far less equipment in it than most other agencies do, just to kind of stay in sync with what we can afford. The other thing we're running into is the increasing costs of every piece of equipment that you put in these vehicles. We're going to be coming back to you later in the year and updating you on some of these cost increases and how they're going to affect us in the long run and how we may be able to work through some of these things. We've been looking for grants. We've been trying to do it the best we can, and the main ticket items are the car camera systems, the body cameras. And when you buy a car camera system, there it comes with a body camera, and they sync together. One of the options we're looking at is maybe can we do without the car camera itself? That's $13,000, you know. And how often, we're going to research how often do we actually use that data in a court case versus the body cameras? Is it just we can't live without that? But everything is gone. The tasers have just, they're proprietary, so they've got the market cornered there, and they just they got you. But we're going to try to look at every avenue we can to cut back on some of the costs. The vehicles, we try to run to 120,000, which you got to figure that's not the idling hours on those things. You know, those things sit, you know, for an hour, 2-3 hours at a bad car accident. So when you add, factor that in there, these they're far exceeding the 120,000 miles that we look at to deadline the vehicle, especially in patrol. And what we do with the higher vehicles is we rotate them to the SROs and to the courts, where, like in the courts, we'll make sure they have 3 really good vehicles for prisoner transports, which they do on a daily basis, so we don't have breakdowns. This year we've had breakdowns. We had one in Norfolk, Virginia Beach somewhere. That cost us a fortune. And then we couldn't even fix that vehicle. So a lot of these vehicles, we're trying to keep them run the best we can. The future of vehicles, we don't, like I say, if you give me the money, I couldn't today tell you 100% which type of vehicle we'd be able to get. The manufacturers are dictating as to what they're going to put out there. And depending, if you don't have the same vehicle, then you got to turn around and buy all new equipment other than the radio and the camera. You got to buy a new cage. You got to buy a new console, all those things. So, but the manufacturers, especially like with the chargers, they've changed things around. You may buy a charger, and what we're running into is once the warranty runs out, we replaced recently power steering box is electric, $2,000 for a power steering box. The headlights were like $700. You got to replace the whole thing. So you're getting a cheaper vehicle, but I think you're getting a cheaper product too. So, but I think they're going to kind of phase those out in the future anyway. All the cars seem to be going, everything seems to be going to the SUVs. But we, you know, as far as the vehicles go, we really need those to keep our fleet up to date. You know, years ago, as long as I've been here, gosh, sometimes we got nothing, you know, and we're trying to make up for that one time during the pandemic when we had nothing. So that's kind of where we are.
Okay. Could you know, off the top of your head, like if you had to say your highest mileage vehicles, what they're running at, and what your average mileage vehicles are right now?
I haven't looked at that spreadsheet.
So our highest mileage vehicle is at about 170,000 miles. We have a couple of most of the patrol vehicles, we start looking at the phase out. Usually it's to another unit or to another area at around 100 to 110. We're pretty spread right now in terms of we've got some new vehicles, real super low mileage. I think the one I'm driving is 75,000. And then a few that are higher mileage than that. We do tend to see most of the higher mileage vehicles in those other units that aren't running 24 hours a day. You know, they're unlike many of the other vehicles that you all invest in any given year. Ours are some of the few that there's at least one of them driving around the county pretty much any hour of any day throughout the course of any year. And so they just are racking that time up. And so we're pretty spread. It's pretty even. But generally, we're seeing those vehicles in probably the 50,000 to 70,000 range.
Per year? Like 50,000 miles per year?
Oh, the mileage per year. So the vehicle I'm in is a 2020, and it's got 76,000 miles on it. And that's pretty average. It just kind of came out of the fleet. I'm just using it because we don't have any other spares. We're pretty short on cars right now. The ones that we have are pretty rough shape.
I know these guys like to see numbers, and I believe everything that you're saying. But I know that the schools did a thing where they brought us how many buses they had were each year old.
We have a spreadsheet y'all can send us that we can see.
We do a monthly inspection. They update the mileage.
Wouldn't mind sending us with the mileage in a year,
right?
That would be great.
It equates to about $58,750 per vehicle on an average for a patrol vehicle. You take, I mean, like mine, my Tahoe. We probably have right at 50,000 in that, which I don't need all those bells and whistles. I don't need a camera. I don't need all those things that they need. I just need what I need to get to where I need to get, if it's an emergency.
And some of my rationale with reduced funding was, one, over the past 3 years, because there was a period where we didn't have a lot of vehicles, the sheriff's office, not that they've got extra vehicles, there was a backlog. So there was, I want to say we got 20 vehicles in 3 years, I want to say right around there. And so again, where we kind of had the same issue with the schools before, where we got a big surplus of a big bolus of buses. Just trying to make sure that we levelize.
It's right around 50.
And you're looking at replacing them at what, about 4 to 5 years, 6 years?
Unless there's like catastrophic failure early that we don't, you know, but yeah, that's
one of those crazy deer runs up in there.
Like my old Tahoe just went out of service. We got 10 years out of that.
That's not going to happen much.
No.
It might have had to do with the sheriff driving that one.
But you know, an average patrol, a 12-hour shift, they'll go anywhere from 200, 250 miles in one shift.
So, Mr. Dahl, there's three of the seven not in here for about 180,000. So if he comes back with those numbers,
we'll look at it. Yes, absolutely. We'll get you a spreadsheet. Anything other than a mileage, a year,
guys?
Anything?
Would that be good?
We're just now starting to add the hours. We started thinking about the hours that really makes a big difference.
So at NFS, we, and Ford brought this to us years ago, and it's part of their fleet program. And we started tracking the expense per vehicle. Mm-hmm. And at the time, their criteria was roughly, once you got up to 25% of your replacement cost in a cap in a 12-month period, that's when we rotate out. So that's a lot of what goes into when we decided.
Exactly.
You know, so I imagine you all track it similarly.
Exactly. I actually keep a spreadsheet. And on certain things like vehicle repair and maintenance, we're very close. We'll probably run out of money at the end of the year.
have to move some money.
We've had some big ticket things like the power steering, you know, that, you know, we have, I think we used to average only about between $800 and $1,100 per vehicle for repairs, and it's, and that's, you know, with the older vehicles, we're going past that. And then some of them hold up really, really well. It's a hodgepodge, but we'll get you a spreadsheet with all of those. And what's happened too is that in the past, when we've gotten staffing, we really never got the extra cars, so we usually wind up with keeping the older cars a tad bit longer.
On the incident command vehicle,
yes.
Why does something like that? Because you have one, right?
Yeah. Well, we have a trailer which we can't tow. We have to call Public Works and say, can you come tow it for us?
You just don't have a vehicle that can tow it.
We don't have. That's a very large trailer. Yeah. It would really take. I think they use the dually when they move it. It's kind of being a bumper pull. It's kind of a little sensitive. So a dually really is what you need to tow that. We don't have that. The largest truck we have is an F-150, and it's not rated to tow that. But they do a great job. Like we had the county fair or something that we know in ahead of time. They come and get it, set it up for us. They do a great job. So we don't have a way to get it there.
If there was an emergency,
we would have to call somebody, yeah, you know, to come in.
It's the pull.
The idea for having the command vehicle, and what we're doing is our dispatchers are being trained to work incidents, okay? And what they would be able to do is, if you had an incident anywhere in the county, one of the three dispatchers could get in the car, that van, and leave and go to wherever that area is. They would have two dispatch centers in there, plus all the lighting and the boards and all the things you need to run an incident command for whatever incident. It wouldn't just be for us, it could be for anybody. You could have a tornado or whatever might happen, that vehicle would be available. It would have a dispatcher with it. And what we'd do is then we'd call another one to come replace them. And if it was something really important, we'd call two people in. That way you'd have two dispatchers there.
Have there been incidences where the trailer's been dispatched?
A few times. Not many, thank goodness. But there's more time we would have used it, but it was more of a hassle to get it there. Yes. Like anytime you have a homicide, any kind of a hostage situation or missing person or whatever, that's kind of when you have that. We have two of our SUVs set up where they're like a mini version of that. We have radio where you can pop up the trunk, you can pull out your stuff and chairs and all that kind of stuff, and set up your little board and all that, and you have a radio in the back as well as in front. But that's as far as our capabilities go right now.
Anything else?
We can, you know, like I say, it'd be nice to have, but if things are tough, we'll definitely come back and ask for it next year, because at some point we have to implement that. And then at some point we need to talk, when we were hoping by now that we would have the new county admin building, because at some point we have to relocate a backup 911 center. Because if we had an electrical fire there, we'd have to go to Alamar County to dispatch our calls. So in the future, that's something we've talked about.
Not until a new building.
We gotta have a place to put it now. Not in the same vicinity. That way, if you had like a little tornado or whatever, and it wiped out, you know, our office a little bit, or the worst thing that bothered me is all the electrical fire. Stuff. If you had electrical fire, you know, we have the capabilities of switching everything to Alamar County. As well as the phone calls, but we would have to go there to work.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I know you have rankings here, so I'm not saying I'm ignoring those. I just want to ask this: if we were willing to say we're going to give you $150,000 more, would you rather spend that on the mobile incident command unit or those three additional vehicles?
We got to answer our calls first.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I skipped Mr. Popowitz really quick. Mr. Popowitz just had one item you want to come up real quick. I think this is pretty easy to discuss.
Yes.
So
out in front of this facility and the facilities here, we have a water line that has been, it was put in years ago. It was covered in concrete. I'm not sure why they did that. Normally you put restraints on that. And my understanding is that during the time that they did this, the line kept blowing up out of the ground. So
front right.
They also disconnected the copper 2-inch lines that are out here, and so we have and capped them. So we have had tons of trouble with those copper lines, trying to keep them. I think we've made 4 repairs since I've been here, 4 or 5, on those copper lines. The problem we have is when we try to, if there's a leak towards that 6-inch line that's out there that's covered in concrete, we've got to chip all that concrete around just that little area. And eventually we're going to run out of ways to get to that line. If that were to blow apart today, we'd be in a world of hurt. We would have to find some alternative way to get water around the broken area. We can't just go in and repair it like we normally would a regular plastic line. So this, like I said, this particular line services mainly this area and the schools. And we just don't have the money in FUSD to repair it.
Yeah, and then the tricky piece about this is, again, FUSD normally funds the FUSD system. The funds in FUSD fund the projects in FUSD. This is a little bit different. Again, it's part of the FUSD system, but the main part of this line funds basically county infrastructure, schools, and this complex. And if the line went out, that would be problematic for the county if that happened, if it's going to the schools. So I have it under other, because technically, normally FUSD would fund this. FUSD doesn't have $375,000 to fund this. So we might have to look at, is there a way for FUSD and the county to put funds in? Is there a way for the county to fund it? You know, in the past, when FUSD went into the when FUSD was not able, because there wasn't rate increase for a while, wasn't able to meet its necessary funding goals, the county had to kind of come in and do a note payable for FUSD so they could do stuff. And maybe that's something.
We're basically the loan to FUSD.
Yeah.
And why, would it go like 7 years without an increase, rate increase?
Yeah. Now, so we are due. We actually, back in early 2020, I brought forward a motion to the board to increase the FUSD rates, but it was literally happened right at the beginning of COVID. So the board authorized for me to move forward with advertising, but then later on we came back and said, well, you know, we're going to hold off right now. We're not going to increase rates. We're probably at the point where we need to bring that forward here soonish again.
Yeah, it's a long time ago now.
Yeah.
So we could do it in a note, though, and then who's in control? So this board.
This board is the governing body of the Fort Union Sanitary District, and again, the main function of the sanitary district is it.
What's that?
Tax. It has different taxing authority for those that are in the district, but the county has never implemented or engaged in what that authority is. What is allowed?
And then we looked at it at one point in time, and I think that some of the lines run out of the taxing district, and then there's parts of the taxing district that don't have water.
Yeah, this
that's one of the, I think, if I remember correctly, that's 7 years ago, that was one of the issues why we didn't say, well, okay, let's just put a special tax there. Because you'd be taxing some that don't have a voice, and others are going, ha-ha.
But you can't base that based upon who has connection or who has available connection that
if you're inside of that district.
You have to be inside the district. You either have to expand the district.
We could easily do that.
And again, too, at some point, and without getting too far in the weeds, I mean, you could get rid of the district if you're not going to utilize some of the special functions of the district. Well, does it just become another part of the county's public utilities? I mean, if the reason for having that authority isn't used, maybe why have it though? Yeah. But that's again, that's, I think that's a later down the road question.
Yeah.
Again, there's some debt that expires in FUSD. I think it's done in 2026, and so I think if the board was going to ever do that, probably want to wait until that remaining debt expires, because that would kind of be the thing that would kind of hold you back from doing that. Someone would have to pay that off.
The other thing is that this particular piece is not within the taxing district of the authority.
Yeah, that's true.
The other thing that we are planning on doing with this is currently these buildings have pressure reducing valves in them. We don't have any way of putting pressure reducing valves near the line, and that's one of the other things that we wanted to do. I'm sure that Mr. Hickman can probably attest to this. There's been issues with those pressure reducing valves blowing up from them having replacement. It's not, you know, it's fairly often enough that it's, you know, it's happened since I started here. So that would be another thing that we would be bringing in to our side to help alleviate some of the issues that are happening within these buildings. They could still leave PRV or pressure reducing valves within the buildings, but they'd be a secondary or a portion of that lateral line, so that if ours failed at our line, then they would have backup and they wouldn't have a blowout in the lines or in some of the facilities here. So you know, we're trying to be team players all around and help everybody. But we just don't have the funding to.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, but you would have to think that a concrete encased line would be pretty foolproof for the most part, no?
No, is it?
No, it's not impervious to water.
Yeah.
I witnessed the hole the last time it was exposed out here. Must have been not this February, so it would have been last March.
I think we had a board meeting or something like that around that time.
It was near the end of my tenure, and there was patch and clamp. It had been patched so many times, and what happened, every time you patched it, that bit became stronger, and it just burst a couple inches farther down.
Inside the concrete encasement?
No, this was before they concrete encased it.
Yeah, this is on those laterals I was telling you about, their cap, but we have one repair on there that we had to actually chip back that casing around it enough to where we could just get a repair on it.
Gotcha.
So.
And that, and those lines have been there how long?
Since the 80s.
Yeah. Early 80s. 40-year-old lines.
Yeah.
So that eventually it's going to bust. And
yeah, and one of the other things.
If it bursts bad enough and we lose water here in the school, could you imagine the school being closed for an indefinite period of time? I don't think it's.
Go back to virtual, because that's two grade levels.
Yeah.
We don't have enough room in other schools to put them in.
So again, we still got a few departments to go through here. We got 10 minutes, but I think that's something we might need to consider, that maybe what that funding stream looks like to get that done.
Okay. So.
Thanks, Mr. Popowitz. Mr. True. So under emergency services, you requested an ambulance replacement, which I funded, updated cardiac monitors, I did not fund, AEDs, I did fund, ventilators, I funded, and Lucas and McGrath devices, I did not fund. So you certainly can ask him any specific questions about his request, or what they are.
The county has no Lucas or devices?
So we had a partial Lucas device funding come from the volunteer squad when they went, when they dissolved. This was to bring up and outfit the rest of the current units rather than having to pull one from one unit and put in another during transition.
Okay.
It was to make sure we had a continuous across the board. That was the same situation with the McGrath devices.
What are those devices?
So Lucas devices are actually devices that do provide chest compressions rather than having a provider do it. The scientific data from the American Heart Association has clearly shown over the course of time that individuals at about the 2-minute mark significantly start to decrease our ability to perform adequate chest compressions for our patients. This is a mechanical electrical device that does a consistent chest compressions at a depth of between 2 and 2.5 inches for the patients. It also allows your providers to be able to be freed up to do other ALS interventions.
And what's a McGrath?
McGrath is a video scope endotracheal intubation device. So the old style, you had the handle, you had the fiber optic blade associated with it, but you didn't have any camera on it. And the new standard coming across the board is actually has camera based with them as well. So when you get into a difficult airway or an airway filled with blood and vomit and things along those lines, you're not necessarily subjecting your providers to being an inch or two from the patient as the aerosol coming across. And the video laryngoscope associated with a piece of plastic called a bougie is actually increasing successful intubation rates.
Gotcha. I got it. One experience.
I understood bougie.
So again, with Mr. True's request, again, knowing that I couldn't fund everything, I went through and, you know, kind of got his rank on what was most pressing. So
between cardiac monitors and Lucas McGrath?
Cardiac monitors.
Okay.
All right, and what are they gonna do for us?
So the cardiac monitors that we currently have, our LifePak 15s are a couple years old. We have a situation where in an AED mode, which means that you don't have somebody that is actually interpreting the rhythm. You have a BLS provider that is not interpreting it. The LifePak machines that we currently have on ambulances, per their regulations and with the FDA, you're not able to do pediatric defibrillation with. So the Zoll monitors are also have that capability, and they're also roughly 8 pounds lighter than what the current LifePaks are.
So just to give some perspective there, and I'm not going to pretend to, I had to, Tony, look up to Lucas and McGrath over here on my iPad too to make sure we're going through. I'm not pretending to be an expert in this, but I do recall us moving the cardiac monitors 2-2 on the Planning Commission. Howard Lagomasino brought up some, not necessarily concerns there, but brought some things up that I won't try to recap, but I can maybe reach out to them and figure out, you know, what specifically, but he kind of shared some things with us that brought us to move that to a 2 instead of a 1.
I can interject on that if you would like.
Absolutely.
It was the age of the actual LifePaks. Those LifePaks were replaced only 2 years ago. The average life expectancy for a cardiac monitor is about 5 years, depending on software upgrades. So that's why that was moved from a 1 down to a 2.
Okay.
Any other questions or thoughts? Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is fire and rescue apparatus for the volunteer agencies. Mr. Lai is here again. So they requested engine 52, Lake Monticello, engine 11, Palmyra, car 50, Lake Monticello, brush 30, Kent Store, and then PPE for PPE for Fourth Union. So with the big request for the two engines, it was said that if the engines get moved forward a couple years, that the cost would be less due to emissions, and then just basically just due to the large request for those, again, not knowing that we can fund everything, I move those to a higher priority over the others. And you know, but if fire and rescue thinks there's a different priority, then they certainly can. You know, they originally came forward with two requests. One was, let's forget this EPA standard. If it was routine, just replacing equipment, I think the request was about $1 million, which was a lot of smaller, apparatus. I think probably Brush 30 was probably the most expensive thing in the initial request. And then when they brought up the EPA change, that's when they brought this request forward with the engines moving up a couple years to replace. So John, you can certainly, Mr. Lai, you can chime in.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary of we prepared two CIP requests, one which had some smaller apparatus, but because of the EPA rules that are coming in, that we've been warned are, their best estimate is about $100,000 per apparatus. Between that and moving them forward and some cost reductions because of expected inflationary increases in them, we anticipate that this should save about $400,000 over the next 5 years. That said, you know, we could move things around again. Those those numbers for the engines are based on Charlottesville Fire just placed an order for an engine, and that's the kind of numbers that they're getting. So that's where we are with the apparatus requests, and it's really up to you. We Rush 30 is a 1998 truck. Well, Mr. Sheridan can
tell you. Well, you'll say Chief 30 knows it better than I do.
Chief 30's here as well. It's an older truck. It was refurbished in 2016 to get us through a little further. It was originally at their expense, but the county did reimburse them. And the agreement then was that Rush 30 would not be come up for replacement before 2024, FY 24. And it got pushed back another year, so it's now in FY25. It's an older truck, you know. It's got some age on it. It's you know, as I said, Chief 30, if you'd like to come up here,
are y'all okay
talk
if
about
he comes
that.
Up just talk
yes.
about it, cause he knows it better than I do.
He knows it better than almost anybody.
It's a 1998-7.3. Obviously, that's a highly sought-out motor. It was donated to us. The chassis was actually donated by Virginia Power, now Dominion, in 2014. We refurbished it using
2014.
That's where we came up with the 2024
okay.
number. We refurbished it for $47,000 using the aid locality money that Columbia had when they were dissolving. So the county really doesn't have a whole lot of money tied up in Brush 30. That's between the state's aid locality money, Dominion's donation, and then our company funds. The vehicle's still in good condition. We have, obviously, it's almost 30 years old. We do have some maintenance that comes with a 30-year-old vehicle, but I just ran it on a brush fire today and had no issues with it. There's a lot of things that are priorities. If you had to ask me, was an ambulance a larger priority than this brush truck, I would say yes. If you had to ask me about the Lucas device, that's absolutely more important than this brush truck. So if it comes to a point where you're trying to cut things, I would tell you we've done a good job with this brush truck. We've saved the county a ton of money. The Brush 30 should, to me, be the example of how to refurbish a vehicle, save some money, and keep using it for another 10 years. I'm fine if you push it back. The only concern I have is if we keep pushing it back, what happens next year and the following year, when more challenging times come forward, and you know, you're gonna have to replace another engine down the road, tankers. So I think the issue may still come up again in the following years. The other thing I wanted to mention is you have almost $800,000 in this fiscal year for our tanker replacement. And I've mentioned this several times before, but not before you all, I don't think that we're gonna use the entirety of that money to replace that tanker. I think that
you're talking about the current fiscal year?
The current fiscal
okay.
year.
The one that we've ordered.
Okay.
We haven't ordered it yet.
Or are working on
but
it.
That number, in my opinion, is relatively high.
Okay.
And
there's some money left
over. I think there's going to be money left over. And I'm trying to be totally transparent here. I think we can fund the tanker replacement, the equipment that's necessary, and still have some left over to apply to maybe this project. I can't give you that exact amount because we don't have exact amounts. But I think I know for a fact there's going to be extra money, just like we had extra money on our engine. We do that intentionally to try to help you all out with Lucas devices and McGraths and stuff like that. So I'm willing to work with whoever to make, you know, to make the priorities, to help you with your priorities. But obviously we're getting to a point where it's 30 years old and we got to make a decision soon.
And then you can just see too for next year, even with me pushing out two of the pieces of equipment, Car 50 and Brush 30, and then this was the differential. I think the 660 was all the little smaller equipment that wasn't originally funded in this year because you moved the two engines up.
I would also agree to, if there's any equipment costs associated with Brush 30, you can remove those. We'll take care of the equipment. We'll fund that.
Let's say we just highlighted some there. That was 1.2 million for all those other things, roughly. What's the disadvantage?
Yeah, 1 million. Little. Yeah.
Well, what would be? Is it advantageous for us to order two engine trucks at the same time? Is that why we're doing that?
It's to save because the cost will go up next year due to the EPA standards and the general cost of increase.
Well, The one thing I would ask is if we put the orders in now, is it guaranteed that we will be getting the cost for those that are not with the EPA piece, that are pre-EPA?
It depends on how you sign the contract. That
would matter. If we could get the contract in right now, it would be they would be grandfathered in if there are engines available, and that's a big if. So, and that's something is kind of unknowable at this point. But the thing is, with this request, the money wouldn't be available until July, so the contract couldn't be signed before then. And what happens between now and July, I honestly can't predict.
Yeah, I would.
Right now, engines are 18 months or more delivery time.
So how much of a deposit is required for the engine?
None.
So why wouldn't we sign now?
Well, you...
Wrong fiscal year.
It's
you can start negotiating.
The money.
You can start to get a quote that's good for 90 days, yeah. And as long as you get it come April, you'll be good to sign on 1 July.
But there's still no guarantee that those would be included and be grandfathered in, right?
No, they would be if it was on 1 July. I think they were saying, what, December?
Yeah, but that's going to be based on every manufacturer, though, too, wouldn't it? I mean, let's just say we move these up and we say we want to do this because we think we're going to be meeting that EPA cutoff. Yeah. There's a possibility that we could go forward and maybe they don't have them available. I mean, I would assume that's
a possibility. I can't say that won't. I can't guarantee that won't happen.
But aren't all the engines filled to order?
No. It depends on who you buy from.
Yeah.
Also, we're working on our tanker right now. And some companies, such as Freightliner, has already built the motors that meet the EPA regulations. So if you
with the upcharge,
they've already been. Once they finish one line of motors, they automatically transition to the next because it's so hard for them to make individual motors.
Okay. So I guess my question is: Would this dollar amount cover that engine? And if it does, then that means that we're moving these items up ahead of things that maybe were.
That
should be replaced.
That's my concern, is that if they come back, if we do this 1.2, let's call it 1.2, and they come back and say, well, this isn't, you know, grandfathered in, we need $300,000 more. We've then just spent the 1.2 that could have been spent on other things, only to spend the 300 that we were trying to save. So that, you know, there's a lot of things in here. And if I recall from the last meeting, it was more like this was a priority to save that extra money rather than them being an absolute need in order to provide those necessary services to the people. So I think, I know it's probably not going to happen here tonight, but I think we need to have I would want to be sure that we're saving that money on the back end before I say, hey, let's spend, you know, $2.4 million when it could be maybe spent elsewhere if we're not saving that money in the long run anyways.
So what's it take for us to find that out?
It's kind of an unknowable. It depends on which manufacturer you go with and what they have with engines, and they're not very forthcoming with that information.
But either way, one of them was on schedule for this year and one of them was for next year, and we moved.
No, one was 21. One was 1 year out, one was 2 years out.
And one was FY26. So at some point, you will get these coming back, and they will be more expensive at that time simply due to inflation. So there will be some savings by doing them now. Whether the EPA additional fees come in or not, I can't tell you either way.
And again, the EPA fee was $100,000, and so this $1.2 million engine, if you bought it in what John had scheduled for fiscal year 26, it was $1,382,000. So you're saving $170,000. Out of that $170,000, $100,000 of it was attributed to the EPA, and then the other 70 was roughly for inflation. So assuming that's what it is, 7%.
I also want to tell you that we have a meeting with the EPA the 26th is Monday, correct? On Monday, the 26th at 11:30, we have a meeting with the EPA about this issue. Our congressman and I have worked together for a couple of years to get this to the point where we can actually sit down with the EPA, because the military is exempt from these rules. They don't have to have all this regulatory equipment, but public safety does. We brought that to the congressman's attention, and we've been waiting for years, but we finally have a meeting Monday at 11:30 to discuss this with them. And they seem willing to
I don't hate to say negotiate, but they seem willing to listen, and they seem concerned. And honestly, they, the ones that I talked to didn't even know that we were having these regulations imposed on us and the amount of money. It's not just the money up front. It's, that's another good point. The money that you save up front is pennies compared to what you save in the long term of owning this vehicle, because it's the cost to fix anything, any of the EPA-regulated equipment on there would cost far more than the upfront cost. And I would say the two vehicles we have, the two engines that we have in Kent's store, we spend more maintaining them than all the other ones annually.
But as you said, military vehicles are
exempt.
Even if emergency vehicles are
ones shipped overseas and military vehicles, fire trucks.
Yeah.
I mean, fire trucks specifically, if a military base buys a fire truck and keeps it here in, say, AP Hill, they're exempt from these regulations. But the Caroline County fire trucks that operate around that military base have to follow those regulations. Yeah. And you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on the cost of that vehicle just for those regulatory equipment.
All right, any other questions? We've got still schools, and we're just coming up on 10 after.
The only thing is I was asked to bring up Car 50 to your attention. Richie runs a lot of calls. He runs close to 700 calls a year, and he's got a lot of miles on that car. He would like to bring that back forward and then retire this to become an emergency medical first responding truck. So it wouldn't go out of service, but it would reduce the number of times it goes out. So.
But it would put another truck on the list.
Well, no, it would be replacing,
which is replacing another
car 51, yeah. Which
that's
is
the only thing I'm thinking.
DOA.
It's 1999 Crown Vic.
It was one that the sheriff's office donated many, many years ago, and it's been run into the ground. It's currently not running. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and last is the schools here. And so, again, Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund, that's funded. If you remember, they originally asked for $1.5 million for the central bathroom renovations. $488,000 was approved by the board for carryover. I don't remember what the open gate detectors are, right off the top of my head, but Dr. Gretz could certainly speak about that. I know it was a two. And then Fluvanna High School track resurfacing, Fluvanna High School football turf replacement. I did include those amounts in my budget. Fluvanna Middle School track resurfacing, I did not. And then for school buses and school transport, I did not include the full portion of the request. They actually requested $540,000 for three buses. I put enough in there for one large bus, and then, half of the requests for the school transport. So Dr. Gretz and Dr. Stribling, I'll leave it up to you to answer any questions. And certainly, you know, if there's thoughts on shifting things around, that can be done as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Dalton. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy to answer questions. To answer the first question about the open gate, those are metal detectors. We looked at those being installed at the high school, and we applied for security grant funds and didn't get them. So that's what that is. Do you want us to present some information to you, or do you want to ask questions about these?
All right.
I know you're pressed for time. And
yeah, so for y'all's knowledge, Eric and I met this morning with them and Dr. Gretz and several board members and got some good information, and then I went out and looked at with Scott Morris this afternoon, track at the high school, and then went over to the track at the middle school and looked at those. And I have some thoughts that I've discussed with Scott, but it probably doesn't need to be discussed this evening. And we can discuss one-on-one,
sure.
And I can discuss with them. We can, I mean, since we're pressed for time, I just don't want us to talk about stuff we don't have to.
Did you want to offer anything about it?
Only if you have questions.
Question. I know that we've done a lot with buses recently, and you know, we have a lot of new buses, and so the fact that we, you know, part of the goal was to try to get to the point where we were sort of normalizing bus purchases and not deferring too many. And I think this has been brought up a number of times, and maybe we've front loaded some of that, is moving the additional four or five buses that Mr. Dahl did, impacting that in any significant way, or you agree with it?
So the buses, it sounds like we're moving, or the recommendation is to move from 3 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be significant as long as we don't continue to see a pattern of that.
I have one question. Do we have any out right now being retrofitted with air conditioning?
We have two that are going to return within the next month.
So we have buses that are away that will be returning to the field.
Correct, and those are the last two of the 12 that we
retrofitted. Okay, I knew it was a big number. Yes, I just didn't know if it was, that's why I was checking.
Yes, sir.
Okay, any other questions?
I'll say this. The other two, I think, are by far a priority. The high school track, just because you host so many high school events. The turf itself is gone from being very soft to not so much. And the problem that you get into with there is when you have kids get tackled on it now, it's like bouncing your head on that floor. And you're susceptible to a lot more concussions because of those things. Now, we've done things to help prevent that. The middle school track, I've said this a long time, I'd love to redo that and open that up to the public. That's my big thing, but I don't know if we can swing both of them.
I got some, again, I'll offer my thoughts on those maybe offline, and then we can touch on those when we come back to work on the budget maybe.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the one thing with, I mean, just with the budget, remember when we put forward the advertised tax rate and the budget, we have to include whatever amounts we want.
The highest.
Yeah, the highest amount.
When does that have to be done?
We do that March
20th?
Third meeting in March. Third meeting.
20th.
The third meeting in March. Yeah. So we got another meeting and two more work sessions.
Yeah, so basically March 13th and then the 20th, you'll have work sessions on that time to work on budget and then determine what you want to do with CIP. So whatever you want to include for CIP projects, if you plan on moving, including more than I funded, we need to include those in what's advertised as well. Because we can always go down, but we can't go back up.
I mean, overall, you know, the trend line for the CIP is looking promising compared to where it was in, you know, just a few years back where we were looking at $14, $15 million pushouts.
When we took the big bite out of it, that helped narrow it down
a lot. So that's a nice trend line that we have there. And we do have a nice, healthy fund balance. So I think it's good CIP plans, and maybe we'll make some adjustments. But
anything else regarding the school? Anything up here?
No. I think that's good right now.
I would like to add one thing. If the board would like to entertain, I did speak with our point of contact with Retorkin, and they are more than field, turf, and tracks. They are more than open to meeting with and answering questions for the board or for the school, if I know. But they are more than willing to do that as well.
Well, the real question I would have there is, if we're putting out two contracts for the replacement, would we not get a better deal than if we did?
We talked about that earlier today, about doing both tracks.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that seems like it might, you know, we're trying to save $150,000 on an engine because of EPA. You know, where's our logic on spending $8 million versus $7 million this year, you know, $8.1 versus $7.9?
Do you have a difference in that price? Or did they give you a difference in that?
Did they give you a difference if you did them both at the same time?
If we did them both, how much would that save us?
I didn't see a price, but I did see that there would be savings. Did they give you a price?
They didn't give a hard number. We would have to, and then they could calculate that after.
So you have two companies that came out and worked with us to give us estimates. And as I was explaining this morning, I think you get a high-level estimate that is the result of what a company's willing to invest in something before you're... they have really skin in the game. And then you'll get a different estimate when you have a solicitation out there, a bid solicitation. And then you end up with a contract. What we have is, and they're both pretty similar with regards to, I think one is in 470, 480 range, K, and another one is 513. One gives us a range, a base price range for the resurfacing, and then three options for the milling or the paving. And those can be, we can look at all of those. I would offer, aside from just the vendor who can answer questions, if any of you are looking at any of these things, I'd love Daddy to do it. I went down and looked because I kept hearing about the chunks that are coming out of the first and second lanes on the high school. We're not able to host the regional tournaments. We've spent over the last 2 years about $100,000 in patching those. And I think we're at the point now where if there's a chance that we're going to actually fix the track, meaning resurface it and do the paving, it doesn't make sense in my mind. I'm not getting ahead of the school board, but it didn't make sense to continue to do that every year. Put $60,000 or $70,000 into patching these things that are going to keep popping up. What I'm told is that it's water damage under the turf because of elevation concerns and grading concerns. We talked this morning. Is that due to design or implementation? I don't know. I can't speak to that. The companies will come out and tell us what they think happened. The concern is that if a couple of things just to consider, and I know you're pressed for time. The track, if that work is going to be done separately from the turf, there is a little bit of a consideration around spending all that money on the track and then a year later dragging heavy equipment across that track to do the turf. The turf, if it's not done, and the turf is what's causing the water to come under the track and cause those things to happen, as I understand it, that will continue to happen under the turf. And then there's asphalt under the turf that will begin to erode and crack, which presents a new problem rather than just the hardness. So I do think it's an important conversation to have around, you know, when these things are going to happen and if they're going to happen in conjunction with each other. The school board hasn't had an opportunity to answer the question, is the middle school track a bigger priority? Or the bathrooms at Central Elementary. And I'm not going to get out ahead of them in that way. I would say I think the track is probably a better investment immediately, and then a little more work on our part to determine what the needs of those bathrooms might be. And you can speak to this. You've been working on this longer than I have. They've been on there for 4 or 5 years. The issue with the track is a safety concern. It's not just aesthetics. There's safety concerns with the track. The issue with the bathrooms are, one of you mentioned, I think, you know, water going off in the schools one day. That happens with those old galvanized pipes. I've experienced that. And when water stops in the school, everything stops. The bathrooms stop, lunch stops. Is that going to happen next week? Is it going to happen in 10 years? No idea. There's not a safety concern right now with students going in the Central Elementary bathrooms. They're very old, they're very dated, and undoubtedly there have got to be plumbing problems. Because as you all know, we've had sewage spill out in the hallway in front of the principal's office several times. Dr. Stribling's worked to deal with that, and we've had somebody come out multiple times. But I guess I'll stop with that. Anything you want to add there, and any questions?
Not unless there are questions.
Okay. Everybody good?
Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that's all that I had for CIP review, just so you all can get a good overview of all the different projects and kind of, you know, any reasoning if I didn't fund them, why maybe you want to. And so we got the regular meeting, so I don't know if the board wants to take a quick break and then come back at a certain point or just keep on pushing on through.
Anybody need a break? I'm good to roll.
We have a closed meeting. And
we will have to do it afterwards.
I'd like 5 minutes, I guess.
So I would agree. I'll second that.
I haven't had anything to eat since.
Yeah, Caitlin, is there stuff in the back? Yeah, there's. So if you want to grab something really quick in the back, there's something.
Let's go say 10 minutes.
We could probably cover the closed meeting in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yeah.
Why don't we take it?
I don't disagree. There's only one item.
Yeah.
Could it be done that quickly?
Yeah.
That was linked them in together. Yeah. If you're going to do it anyway, we're going to take 10 minutes.
How much discussion are we going to have right now?
You got the yellow book?
I don't have the yellow book.
No, it's 6.
Oh, it starts at 6.
Yes.
Can we do that?
Oh, sure. Madam Chair, I move the Bryan County Board.
Wait, slow, go ahead.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move the Nevada County Board of Supervisors and closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing employees of the finance department.
Second.
All in All those in favor say aye.
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 All against? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Mr. O'Brien made the motion and I seconded it.
And I just want
I like it.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Nevada County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion made by Tony, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. But we have to do this roll
call. Yes,
we
have our roll call.
Aye.
Aye.
Coltrane.
Yeah.
All right.
Hodge.
Aye.
Goad.
Aye.
Sheridan.
Aye.
O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0. All right, welcome to tonight's regularly scheduled board meeting, February 21st, 2024. And we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll start with the adoption of the
no changes from me, Mr. Chair.
So made. Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0. All right, we'll move on to administrator's report.
Yep, just got a few things to report. I've got a few new employees that started here. One, Nancy Wilk, started in the Public Works Department for the Administrative Program Specialist. She started February 12th. Paula Franklin started with the Department of Social Services as a Human Services Assistant 3. She started February 20th. And then Becky Wiseman started at the Clerk of the Circuit Court's Office as a Deputy Clerk 2, and she started February 20th. Certainly want to welcome all of them to Fluvanna County and glad to have them on board. So the Small Business Administration grant update. So Dan Fellows, business advisor, will be available to Fork Union businesses for one-on-one confidential assistance. And expert advising free of charge. So meet Dan Fellows, business advisor.
This is the part-time position?
This is the part-time position, yeah. So he's been hired, and we're going to be getting him set up in the community center, and then he'll be available to meet businesses. Does Schmeck anything to add? Or
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Thank you.
Times,
Jennifer?
8 hours
a day. Yep. And then the 2023 Virginia Master Naturals Volunteer of the Year is Walter Hussey. And I'm not going to read all this. And I know Mr. Spitzer, I didn't see him, or maybe he popped out. I mean, certainly, Walter Hussey has been a very engaged volunteer for Pleasant Grove Park. He's done lots with the 70 acres of hay fields that were transformed into native meadows. He was, definitely a part of a lot of projects, self-guided trail tours, the butterfly garden. He certainly didn't do this alone, but he's been instrumental in establishing partnerships with many county, private, and nonprofit groups who supplied with permits, grants, manpower, and coordinated many educational activities. Again, I think anyone that wants to go on here and see all the work that he's done, and there's a video here too that you can see about Mr. Hussey's recognition. Just click on that. That's probably the better. Let's see here.
It's in the video, though.
It's in the video.
It's like further down.
Okay, never mind.
Number 7, I think, is what it's called.
Well, like I said, it's 2 minutes, but like I said, we will have this online. Please take a look. You know, certainly, I know Mr. Spitzer would certainly sing his kudos. He's done a lot of work at Pleasant Grove Park and throughout the county. So we want to certainly congratulate him on being the Volunteer of the Year, Virginia Master National Volunteer of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, quick question.
Yep.
Has anybody gone out there to see if the hive and done it? They've heard any quail, any Bob Whites?
Mr. Spitzer?
Just go out there and whistle.
Yep. And then just some upcoming meetings. So February 29th, which this should be corrected, you should say Thursday, February 29th at 5:30. We'll have constitutional officer briefs and county agency briefs in the Morris Room. Wednesday, March 6th, we'll have a 5 p.m. regular meeting. Then at 7 p.m., the Fluvanna County Schools will present their FY25 adopted budget. Wednesday, March 13th at 5:30, we'll be having again, that's really where we kind of start a lot of the budget work session stuff. That'll again be in the Morris Room. So that'll kind of be a long one. And then after March 13th and March 20th, we'll have a work session. We only have an hour for a work session. And then at that meeting, we have to set a proposed tax rate and budget. And remember, that's kind of the high water mark. But so the 13th and the 6th, we'll have a lot of work to do to kind of prepare for the 20th. So happy to answer any questions the board has.
So I'll be gone the 29th, Thursday. But I can't attend virtually. This is a non-motion session, so other than providing a notification that I'm not going to be here, I don't think there's anything involved, correct?
No, you can, if you just notify the chair, we will just have a motion to approve your participating remotely.
But again, they're going to be presentations and justifications.
We're just sitting and listening to that stuff.
Right. But yeah, does that fall into the two?
Two personal meetings.
Two personal.
That does still count as one of those.
Now, if you just want to watch on, is it on YouTube?
Yeah.
You can just watch on YouTube, but if you want to participate,
or ask questions.
So if I watch it, then I'm just in absence. And if I participate, then it's one of my two.
Yeah.
For personal reasons.
Yeah.
Right. So the chair will know because the chair will be beside him.
Yes.
And so that's one of the things we wanted to clarify. So then, do you know if all three of you all will be here at the meeting?
We'll be there.
I'm planning on being there.
All right.
Somebody better remind me. It's Thursday. I'll be sitting there on Wednesday going, hey, where the heck is everybody?
Oh, it is Thursday.
Tim has to remind us since he's the one that got him. He's the reason I got moved.
Yeah. Well, that means that Chief Constantino should be providing food tonight.
It's actually two meetings or 25% of the meetings.
That's what I was saying. It's 25.
25%. Yeah.
I'm ready to say it's a quarter of
each. Yeah. Each meeting.
Whichever's larger, right?
How would you count special meetings?
It's still a meeting. It doesn't say right order.
We have, so let's say we have an average of 33, 34 meetings. Yeah, 25%.
Yeah, like 8 of them.
Yeah. Okay.
7 of them.
I was doing that for you.
We're going to be doing it from blue.
One of us might
hey,
make
real
it
quick.
That's okay.
I sent a comment. Guys, real quick, and I know this is probably not the right time, but I just want to make sure that we recognize the folks up at Loudoun. I sent out an email about that. They lost a fireman in the line of duty, and we've lost 5 folks in the line of duty here, 3 rescue and 2 firemen in my lifetime. Hopefully it'll never get any bigger than that. But I think it would be good if we found a way to put some remarks together, send a message up there or something.
There are also 10 injured people up there.
Yeah.
I think your article said there were 10 injured firemen.
Yeah, there's 10. Several of them are still in the hospital. I'm sure that those two guys out there probably know more about it than I do, but we were looking at articles on this. One of our assistant chief was sending out articles, and our chief was sending out articles. So this is just, we all know the dangers we take, the risk we take whenever that tone drops, period.
Amen.
But just, that's something you don't ever want to have happen, and unfortunately for them, it did.
All right, we'll move on to the first round of public comments. Anybody wishing to address the board, just come to the podium, state your name and address, and please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic
and directly to the board. Anyone wish to come to the podium?
Andrew Pullen, Columbia District, and Chief of the Kent Store Fire Company. I just wanted to speak now because I won't be able to be here when the department heads give their presentation to you all. And I just wanted to stress to you how thankful I am for Mr. True and his department and how good of a job they've done. I have probably been one of the most critical people during that process. And I think it's important for me to stand up here in front of you and say that Jim has done a fantastic job. He's responsive. He takes care of issues immediately because they're going to happen. He's even answered the phone for me when he's on vacation. So I just wanted to commend him and let you all know that the relationship that we have with him now, speaking for myself as a fire chief, is better now than it's ever been. And I stood before you all maybe 2 years ago, maybe three, in support of a fire chief's position. And I do know that is probably, at the time, it was needed, and it will be needed in the future. I think you all have that in your budget. But I'm also willing to say that he's doing such a fantastic job that I think you can save some money there. I don't think we should do anything to risk that relationship. Make the gentleman a director. He's supervising more people than any department head other than the sheriff's office. Pay him what he needs to be paid. Let him do his job. Let him work with us the way that I know we can. Let's put that fire chief's position off. Maybe we can use that money. For me, I'm very passionate about hiring some sort of career staff in Kent Store. I've emailed, my community's emailed you all. We're still missing, I hate to say missing, but it's the truth. We're still missing about 20% of the calls. That doesn't seem like a large number, but when you run 400 calls a year, 100 calls a year is a lot. Eventually, that's going to be a cardiac arrest. Eventually, that's going to be someone's house fire. You all received emails from a lady that said her two daughters were in an accident and she waited forever for someone to get there. That happens. It happens even if there are people there because Kent Store is so far out. So again, this year I feel compelled to ask you if there's a way to provide even one person, and Mr. True will have a plan, him and I have been working together on this for some time, if there's a way to even provide one person part-time in Kent Store to help, it'll make all the difference. It will literally save lives. Thank you.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Chris Baca. I live at 40 Turkey Sag Trail. I'd just like to take a moment and on behalf of the Fluvanna Rotary Club and Macca Food Pantry, I want to thank Calvin Hickman and the crew that he manages for the outstanding job they've done in the past few weeks in moving all the refrigerators over from the sheds into the brick building. And yesterday we were surprised that the recent refrigerator we ordered was delivered. And today it was moved over and down into the brick building. They've done a wonderful job, and they're so easy to work with. And I appreciate your support of that department. Thank you.
Thank you for all the rotaries done.
What's that?
And it says thank you for all the rotaries done to make that center happen there.
Two kudos back to back. That's good. We don't get that up and coming all day. Anybody else? Seeing no one, we'll close the first round of public comments and go to A, appointments, board commissions and committee appointments.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the board, we have an open seat for the JABA Board of Directors Citizen Representative, and we have one appointee, and we would be, if you want to have the appointee come up and say why he does, I'm sure you all would be engaged to appoint him.
I don't know, I've been here so much, I don't think we should do it.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Chris Baca, and I'm delighted to have the possible privilege of representing the county in this director seat, and I hope to get your support. Thank you.
Questions?
Are we sure there's nobody else?
Mr. Chair, I'm delighted to move that the Board of Supervisors approve the following Board of Commission Committee appointment: Jefferson Area Board of Aging, Board of Directors, Citizen Representative Chris Baca, for a term starting March 1st, 2024 and ending February 28th of 2026.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien. You seconded?
I did.
Seconded by Mr. Goad. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Finally.
Thank congratulations.
You. Thank you.
I think that was three times.
Yeah.
Three times.
Strike out.
Children, baby. All right. We'll move on to presentations. Letter B.
Well, Mr. Whitten, go ahead. Just let me know when we're ready.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Don Ardon, tag team on this presentation. So the board had made a motion at our last meeting, actually two meetings ago, to come back with a presentation on Appomattox County and the ordinance that they passed in 2022 to remove large-scale, utility-scale solar as a conditional use in agricultural zoning district. So I did pull that ordinance, and it is in your packet. So basically, they removed it as a conditional use. They also increased the setbacks to 100 feet from the edge of any stream, creek, pond, lake, or wetland for solar panel arrays and battery storage facilities. Prior to 2022, they didn't have battery storage facilities in their ordinance. And in addition, the ordinance also increased their landscape buffers to 100 feet for solar panel arrays and battery storage facilities. So I think in my research, there's two other localities that have basically eliminated large-scale solar. And Clark County, which is up near Winchester, and I believe there's another county in South, it was
I believe Bedford just
okay. I know there's a South Side County as well that I've read that eliminated solar in that county. But the next slide kind of goes into the issue right now brewing in the General Assembly that may not allow that practice. So basically, Senate Bill 697, which did pass the Senate, it's now over to the House, it's in subcommittee. And so basically, that ordinance says that no local ordinance shall include limits on the total amount, density, or size of any solar facility or energy storage facility until the total area under panels within the locality exceeds 4%. Obviously, we're a long ways away from 4% under panel. So we actually couldn't ban solar in the zoning district until solar was more than 4% of the locality's total area. Now, obviously, we passed a resolution opposing this bill. That was sent to our two delegates and our senator. Looking at this, it's in subcommittee right now. We don't have a delegate on the subcommittee, but we talked about possibly sending the resolution to the, I think there's maybe up to 10 members on that subcommittee, sending it to them to see our state. And also VACA, Virginia Association of Counties, Joe Lurch has been working on behalf of counties, basically opposing this bill as well. So the provisions of the bill would not apply to any application that was submitted to the locality before July 1st of this year. And then, so looking at the impacts of the bill, the bill would not require any localities to approve an application. So that was the one bill we were worried about, where the State Corporation Commission could approve projects over 50 megawatts. That bill was carried over till next year. So basically, we wouldn't be required to approve any battery project, battery storage projects, or solar farms. And we could still have criteria regarding siting. So we could still have setbacks and buffers for solar facilities. And also, so basically, once we exceeded 4%, then you could have that language of an outright ban. And I'm not sure how many acres the county is.
That was a question I was trying to ask a while back. What is that total number of acres?
We'll find out here. Someone will find out while we're talking.
I saw the number this morning. I'm at the end.
Yeah. I think last time I asked the question about acreage, there was like 830,000 acres here or something like that.
And so a lot of counties do have the prohibition under 4%. So you'll have to, if this bill is passed, then they'll basically have to amend their ordinance if it's less than 4%.
35,000 acres is a lot of land.
Yeah. Next steps, basically, I was talking to Mr. Fairchild on the phone about possible options, you know, while we're waiting to see what Senate Bill 697 does, because the, let's see, the General Assembly ends March 9th. I think March 4th is that all the committees have to finish Senate, you know, finalize all discussion on bills, and March 9th is their last day. So the next steps is the board could request the staff consider drafting the ordinance where there's supplemental regulations similar to what other counties have, where you address areas of concern, including setbacks and buffers. The board could also hold a work session where staff could present options for a draft ordinance, but the ordinance would have to be sent to the Planning Commission for a public hearing before it could come back to the board, and then there would be a public hearing.
I will say this much. When we went down to Richmond, Mr. Fairchild, we both went down there. I caught our past president, Jason Bellows from Lancaster, and I would like to look at their ordinances also, because they have run into a lot of the problems and then adjusted their ordinances accordingly. I don't think that would be a bad thing to look at that one as well. You talked to him for a while. Would you agree?
I mean, I don't...
I'd like to look at their setbacks, just to see what their setbacks are compared to these setbacks.
And there's much of that one over there on 53.
Yeah, it was...
this is where I said learn
from absolutely.
Because we didn't take into account
and that could have been
the power lines. The power line's part of the 100 feet.
The gist of theirs was that within a certain part of the county, it's 1,000
foot. They had a up to 1,000 foot setback from major highways like Route 15. Yeah. Route 6 would be another one.
The question I have is on our planning maps, there's certain areas designated as rural preservation. Can solar be allowed in those, even though it's an A1 with a special use?
Mm-hmm. Right now it is. You know, if you had an ordinance, you know, basically addressing, you could have more larger setbacks, larger buffers in those areas. Another option I was showing is Alamo County. I think they got so much pushback from their solar farm on 53. That's why they're looking at amending their regulations and increasing. I think the setback for 53 would be 400 feet project, under their draft ordinance. So what they did is they had staff present to their board, and then they had a work session. And then now they've set up a feedback portal where members of the community can submit feedback and on the draft ordinance before it goes to the Planning Commission.
I can just tell you, I talked to Ann, she's the chairman still anyway. She's the president of ACO now. And I told her, I said, I'm sure you haven't driven by, but I'll guarantee you, whatever your ordinance is, it's not being followed up there because it's only about 50 feet.
I think it probably is followed. I think it's probably what was approved.
Now they're increasing it
to 400.
Because they realize that's what it looks like when it's 50 feet.
I drove by yesterday
just to see what it looked like. I hadn't seen it since they put the panels up. And I was just amazed how close it is to the bridge. Yeah. I've seen it by
the close to the
field. That's 30 yards on a football field. That's nothing.
Well, and all they did was leave the scrub trees that were
all little pines.
You know, well, I told her I pulled in there by accident to park, to change drivers one time. We were coming home, and I was like, okay, we got to change drivers. Pull up in here. And they pulled over, and it's brand new gravel down. I said, whoa.
That's not right.
And it's just right there.
Plus, I was a bit off subject, but I was told yesterday by a property owner that 800 acre solar farm has been approved in Albemarle over, let's just say, in the vicinity of Mount Ida. So,
well, Buckingham just had a 1,000
acre, 80 megawatt, was approved last week.
Yeah. Which I think is, they said it's the
largest in Virginia by the end of the past year.
Yeah,
it's been approved.
Yeah. And just for the board's knowledge, Ms. Harris found it. So we have 290 square miles equals 185,600 acres.
So it'd be 7% of that.
So about 7,000. 4%.
How many did you say? 185?
185,600 times 4%.
Times 4.04. 74,000. Or 7,400.
Yeah. In other words, you're going to get a bath of solar for you.
Well, how much do we have in solar right now? We got about 10 fields.
Less than, probably less than percent, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a 50.
So between the one up at Zion's Crossroads, I can't imagine that's more than,
well, the schools, 50 acres. The schools will count also. The schools probably have 10 acres of solar.
Would the schools?
That's
a good point.
There's not an exemption. I mean, under the current language, there's not an exemption.
Yeah, it just says 4%.
Because so they were. I thought they were not supposed to be utility scale solar. It was, for the schools project, it was supposed to be more
utility scale. It's got to be 6-7 megawatt.
Yeah, I don't know. That's I'm not sure about the schools. We've got three approved solar projects right now. We've got the Zion's Crossroads one, mm-hmm. We've got the one up at Cunningham, and there's one that's approved on Carriagebrook Road that hasn't been constructed.
I think the operating part of the language is if it's not for your personal use, if you're selling it, I think that's the operating.
So what the language says, there should be no limits on the total amount of density or size of any ground mounted, so not roof mounted, it's on ground mounted solar facilities.
Okay. All right, so three of the schools are ground mounted.
Yeah,
so that's
unless
probably
a total area of
15 acres, 20 acres,
whatever they have on the ground.
Middle school, all three, middle school, Carriagebrook, and Central, all have ground mounted solar.
So I can't imagine, this is probably the high water mark, but 20. I can't imagine we have more than 150 acres of panels.
It's 50. How big is the one on South Boston?
I'm just guessing.
29.
I'm just guessing 50 for each one of them. I'm probably off, but
I think it was 29 up at
which
one? South Boston.
So we would have another 50 times what we already have.
I drive by the Omaha one.
Before we can see.
At 60 miles an hour, it's a blink. I drive by it.
At which one?
In those 2 seconds, I go, oh my God.
Sheriff, did you hear that? 60 miles an hour in that 45 zone?
It's an Alamo.
Oh, 53.
That's 55.
Okay, well, 45. Okay, those 3 seconds.
I thought you were talking about South Boston, my bad.
And those little scrub trees, they will grow and they'll be bigger. And you know what I thought it was going to be when it was first being put in? I thought it was going to be a subdivision with a bunch of homes in it. So that's what I thought was going to be there.
I knew what it was.
But anyhow.
So does the board want us to come back with, where do you want us to go from here? I mean, so one thing is for certain, the board did approve to have a third work session that we're still, unless the board wants to change that, we're going to plan that for after budget time. So that's not going to happen until like April.
Yeah.
I know that we've had some projects that have requested deferrals until the county has some changes to their ordinances.
And the projects also said they would like to work with the county on any changes.
Yeah.
And work with, be partners with the county on this.
So I'll say, as far as those deferrals, I'm not saying it is, there's no way for me to know, but it's interesting that they asked for those deferrals right when these bills came under consideration. And had the bills passed, then they wouldn't have to come to us.
No, they were both under 50 megawatts. So when
really? Mm-hmm. But they still wouldn't have had to come with proffers and so on, would they?
Yeah, but they still would. Yeah, because that bill only affected projects over 50 megawatts. So then once a CDP's 38 and Pine Gates.
They're both under 50. Mm-hmm.
I would still like to look at the Lancaster ordinance requirements, the buffers and things of that nature, just to get, because what we talked about was he's been through some of these issues like we had happened with us in South Boston when you could see it so plainly.
So one thing to consider too is, a lot of where they put the solar is in relationship to closeness to transmission lines. Higher density areas are going to have a lot of that land already taken up, so they're not going to have those transmission lines available to them as easily as possible. So, we have, if you look at the transmission lines that run, say, down Transco Road and all those kind of things, my expectation is that you would see utility scale solars starting to happen in those areas, which are pretty much off most roads, if you would, and pretty far back there. So you're probably not going to see as much of a concern around major roads for, buffer areas from that standpoint. I don't think you're really
one of our big ones right now is over Route 6.
No, I understand that, and I would, as you know, I didn't vote for that one, as Chris likes to point out, because it was in Zion's Growth area.
That would be Route 15. I thought about the new ones.
Oh, the new one.
There's one coming forward on near Route 6.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah, you're right. I was talking about Route 15. So, mm-hmm. But Route 6, you know, maybe that one does apply as far as the
buffers. Like I said, I'm not making any decision.
I'm
just saying, would anybody else be interested? I would be interested in comparing buffers and things of that nature. And I think the more we look at, the better it will be.
I think our buffers need to be better, and we need to ask ourselves, do we really want to allow battery storage with all the problems that go with it? But on top of that, you talk about the transmission lines. Remember, it was less than a year ago, Dominion wanted to change the power line near Cunningham Creek Winery, all the gyrations you went through with that, and that was just fixing the substation. Mm-hmm. Solar panels is way more than that. So you get wineries and other people, hey, transmission's line there, let's put the solar farm. That could really hurt their business.
So
we need to be mindful of stuff like that too.
It's interesting you brought that up because, as was mentioned over near Transco Road and so on, it would be out of our control, at certain elements of this would be out of our control for, let's say somebody wanted to put in a 300 or 200 acre solar farm in that Cunningham area, Cunningham Winery here, Cunningham Creek, because that's where the line is. Well, you take, they already have Tenasca. They already have the shooting range behind them. They have the big substation that you just mentioned. And the SCC, you know, making decisions of whether they could then have a 300 acre solar farm. But we're not going to resolve that here. So my thought was, so in my mind, I keep, Mike, what you're saying separate as far as the setbacks and so on, that if we were to consider this, we don't have to consider their entire everything exactly as they do it. So they speak to setbacks and so on also. So if I was considering taking that out of A1,
right,
then the setbacks aren't necessarily their set. I wanted to look at what they did regarding A1. Everything they did wasn't so relevant to me. I look at that and I go, well, 100 feet, I would want more than that.
Yes.
So really, I was more looking at that A1 piece of it than what all of their stipulations.
The only reason I mentioned it, they did that at the same meeting, as part of the same ordinance. Right. That's the only reason I mentioned
it. So couldn't you theoretically, if you wanted to start from the general and work back to the specific, you could say, you know, we want to consider, you know, limiting this to I-1 or getting it out of A-1, then you could work back from there to establish your ordinances for I-1. Now, that's not taken into the fact of, you know, if this goes through Richmond, that's kind of, I don't want to say a moot point at that point, because, you know, who knows if you're going to have litigations or injunctions and things like that of that nature. But I think I see your point as saying is we're not necessarily concerned about the nitty-gritty at the, you know, when it comes to a fundamental conversation about does it belong in A1, I don't know that setbacks, are you saying that setbacks aren't necessarily essential or inherent to that conversation or important to that
Correct.
Conversation?
Correct. If a person was to have the greater concern over relieving some of the pressures that solar is now placing on a lot of counties, then it would be the A1 factor, the setback would not be relevant. Not to say that we shouldn't set setbacks, but that's not the relevant piece of what brought the Appomattox scenario to our table.
With the, I'm a little lost here in terms of, okay, we have maybe higher setbacks with I-1, fine. But if we can go ahead and put in our own setbacks when it comes in with solar, why are we going to rezone a piece of land that could be used down in the future for something that we wouldn't want because it's already been rezoned for that purpose? We're not really taking away any of our power by having a special use condition, you know, in terms of the use of the land. All we're doing is adding another obstacle, which then says, okay, you now have to get it rezoned for industrial purposes. Well, the practicality of that is if it's profitable enough for them to do that, they'll go ahead and rezone it for industrial purposes at that point in time. So I don't know that really is a significant enough hurdle one way or another, and or gives us any particular advantage. But what it does do is it makes that land I-1, which down the road could be problematic. So I don't really see the advantage of that.
Well, so I would say I understand what you're saying. I would say, though, if you're talking about an area that's in rural preservation, someone comes to you to rezone that to I-1, you'd probably look at that and say, well, that doesn't quite fit with the comp plan. Now, if you're talking about a spot zoning, if you're talking about a CPA, if you're talking about behind the firehouse in Fork Union, which has been zoned industrial, and you're talking CPA, that's in the CPA, maybe that's a different conversation. But when you look at the area of land that's within those CPAs, those largely rural, more rural parts of the county, a lot of that's the green and light green. And I think would probably be spot zoning if someone were to just say, hey, and to that extent, I mean, they probably need to at least go through a special use permit process again at that point if they were to. So I think the spot zoning thing kind of covers you there a little bit.
Good. And I had asked the same question of Appomattox, and they, you know, kudos to them, came back and said, we've considered most factors around that, and one of them was that if you zoned industrial out in the middle of Cunningham, that would likely be spot zoning.
So. Yeah, that's what you've got. Zions, you've got there in Fork Union. Down there's an area down in CPA down in Scottsville, right?
A little small area.
And then obviously up.
There's a little Columbia, and then there's, I'd say around the lake.
Yeah, but that's not really where you want to install solar farms anyway. I mean, that's,
right.
You know, there's not a lot of benefit to putting them there, I would say. That's where you want development, business development growth to occur, and or housing growth.
Well,
too,
there's people that will, there's people that will tell you that this, I'm sure if CEP were standing in front of us, they would say it's economic development because they'll tell you all the tax revenue and things it'll bring in. So I guess it's up to us at that point. We're considering an industrial piece of land that someone wants to put solar on. Do we use this for solar or wait for, you know, warehousing, which may provide jobs and traffic and revenue and things like that? So,
well, I think in a lot of cases that is being done with the anticipation of down the road the land will be more valuable for them in order to do that. So the further you out you get out from a particular zone, you do that. So in the case of the property that was approved down in Zions Crossroads area, that was done 10 years ago, something along those lines. You know, here we are 10 years later and we're still just starting the development process down there. 10, 15 years from now, they will have had 20 years, they would have fully utilized that land for their purposes, and then they may come back and say, okay, we're done, pull the solar panels out, we're ready to sell the land and do something else with it. You know, similar to why people put in storage units. They do that for a business reason, in order to maximize the value of the land as they're anticipating that growth, you know, from that perspective. So, I see, you know, that as there's these demands coming in, and there's particularly with utility scale solar, because it does require that connection to the transmission lines, you know, because it is significant with the batteries behind that, there's probably not a lot of the land of Fluvanna that applies to begin with, and then you have to have the people willing to install that, and then you have to ask yourself, well, why is that particular landowner choosing to sell it? What is he doing with that land? Or in this case, lease it, not sell it. You know, what is he doing with that land, and what would be the alternative to that? So, you know, we're going to have continued applications throughout the state of Virginia for solar, wind farms, etc. And they're going to be measured in terms of the best and most prime locations for that. What does that location look like for us? You know,
well, roughly 90% of our county, the topography is fitting. So, it would seem to me, not when doing battery storage, it's where does our grid go?
That's what I'm saying, is in fact that, is when I asked the question about that location for that solar farm on 15, I said, why are you putting it here? And they said, well, if we want to be close to the transmission lines, you know, the further out, the less efficiency and the more expensive it is to run those transmission lines. So, you know, if you then take the Senate bill that says, okay, you could have 7,000 acres, I would imagine if you did you know, 1 acre buffer around the transmission lines, that would be your 7,000 acres right there. That would be the pieces of land that people who are putting in solar farms are most likely to put those in if it's available to them. And I think you're going to continue to see probably, you know, the state make it friendly, because you're battling major industry, you're battling the Dominions of the world in order to do this. So they're paying a lot of they're paying a lot of money to the senators and congressmen in order to get their way. So
yeah, I think it's a mandate that the states put on themselves in a lot of way, and by virtue they put it on, you know, folks like us to sit up here and consider because of the, you know, the bill that set these very high benchmarks for things like this that you know, we're still learning about, yet we're having to kind of go about doing these things, or at least they're being brought to us in order to achieve these goals, and there's still a lot of things that we need to learn about them. And I think that's a lot of people's fear around here, is that there is a lot of unknown still out there. And I think looking at places like Albemarle and Buckingham that have done these things, while I said this when the CEP proposal came up in December at the Planning Commission, that I'd rather be late to a game and say, man, kind of wish we could have done it sooner, but if it's still something that's going to be, you know, bring profits for developers and things like that, they'll still come to us later on down the road and say, okay, and then maybe panels are smaller, maybe people are more comfortable with it at that point. I think there's a lot of concern in the communities, especially in the more rural parts of the county, with things, you know, from health concerns to property values. I mean, all three of the big, or two, three of the big ones that we're considering right now are, I don't want to use the term, but in a lot of mine and folks I represent's backyard, and those folks have a lot of concerns. And, you know, I think that fundamentally to me, I see it as an industrial use. And I think that's kind of where, as I thought about this more, is that it's an industrial use. It's not an agricultural use. And yes, I understand that the special use permit process gives us the opportunity to weigh that. But to me, fundamentally, it's an industrial use. And I think that that's kind of where I'm leaning on this, is that, you know, maybe this is something we look at where while we're continuing to learn and it's evolving, maybe we say hold off on our ag land for right now.
So again, I'm confused. If the board isn't willing to pass it as a special use permit, what difference does it make if you put it in industrial?
Changes taxation. It changes the use. We don't. The scientists can't even agree themselves what the implications down the road are for that land and whether it'll ever be able to be returned to agriculture. You posited the question earlier, there must be a reason landowners are doing this. And I'll tell you outright, it's financial. If the crop would make more money with no risk of crop failure, they would plant a crop. Mm-hmm. But solar panels is guaranteed revenue each month with no risk of crop failure, no risk of pestilence, no risk of drought. You know that money's coming through the door.
Right.
And I think that's why it's leaning in that direction.
A lot less effort.
I mean, in my lifetime alone, I remember people saying, 8 billion people on the planet, where are we going to get our food from? And the problem you have is we're putting solar where we could be growing food, and we're trying to put people in the desert in states like Arizona and New Mexico where there's no water and we have water issues. I mean, God kind of made it pretty clear to us. It's a desert. Don't live there. Grow your crops on your agriculture land. Yet we're so eager to turn the agriculture land under, we're not only going to have a water problem, but then eventually we'll have a food problem. Why not grow food where you can grow food and put the solar panels where you can? The myth that the transmission lines lose, yes, they lose power, but it's 4%, and buried power lines lose less than overhead aerial power lines. And I still don't understand why we don't put our power lines in the ground. They've done it in Europe for years. When I moved back after being over there for 30 years, I was shocked at the rat's nest of cables on top of poles. I thought I'd come to Pakistan.
So, well, I mean,
there's ways we can be better and smarter.
Sure, except I'm going to venture here that all three of those properties where they're proposing are either forestal or hay right now, so there is no real
corn.
Or maybe some corn on some of them, I don't know. But Levanta County is 85% forestal, I think.
Yeah.
A little bit of corn and the rest is hay. I was speaking to the landowner today and asking him, well, why don't you do more cattle? His answer is because we don't have very good hay yet. It's too acidic in its nature. You know, yes, you know, soil sounds great, but it actually depends on the quality of that soil from his perspective. So while that's a great argument, if the application isn't already there and being used, you're not growing more food in Fluvanna County for the rest of the world. It's just a matter of what is that landowner going to do with that piece of property. You know, now, by right, as I've said many times, the landowner could put a pig farm there and his neighbors would probably object to that, but he can do it by right. You know, that landowner owns that piece of property and his neighbors aren't paying him for that view, right? So he does have a right to be heard without an awful lot of obstacles in order to get to that process and that point. You know, if the land is being used for 30 years for solar panels and that helps preserve that land for those 30 years until a better use can be found, maybe there's better technology for farming, maybe there's a higher use for that from an economic perspective, that's great. But what it does do is it does reduce the growth of housing, because that landowner might be forced to subdivide that land, which would then bring in more housing and more costs and infrastructures on us. So I think that, you know, you have to measure all these things as each property is being presented, not as a whole. And, you know, so that's my opinion.
But is a special use permit versus a rezoning one harder than the other? They're both same amount of hoops to jump through. No. And secondly, if you build houses, the way our ordinances are written now, I can't take 100 acre and divide it into 52 acre parcels. I can do a rural cluster, and that means I got to put a 75% of the way into one cluster, or one parcel that can't be used for anything else.
Sure.
But still, with 25 acres
still got,
of wells.
You know, whatever.
25 acres of houses.
Yeah.
With wells.
Right.
Would, yeah. A bad way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we had it over here on Courthouse Road where they wanted dual septic, and the board said no. So there's precedent already been established there.
But we're not going to let a property owner in the Cunningham District out off 620 decide that he's going to sell his property to afford to build a 2 million square foot manufacturing plant. We don't give, our society has agreed that that is not in a general good for the general public. We already make these types of decisions. We have zoning, we have planning, and so, you know, just like we have areas of the county that are agricultural, that we say we're not going to have industrial and a lot of residential development, this is saying that a mass of our county is agricultural, and that's important to us, and we're going to protect it in that way, at least until we know more about solar. And I say this is saying, that's what I take from what Appomattox said.
So I'm still confused. You're saying that we're not going to let that happen, but if a property was rezoned for industrial purposes, and they, in theory, depending on the uses that are available based on the zoning, they could do that because you rezoned it for industrial purposes and then got approved. So it's not just this board. There are other boards that will come down the road, and they may have different perspectives. And if you rezone that land at that point in time, it's subject to the by right uses of that industrial
unless
ordinance.
You have proffers.
Unless you have a proffer, but
uses that you don't want.
Yeah.
Again, it's sort of like, okay, you forced me to rezone this into industrial. I'm going to proffer everything else out, and then you're still going to pass the solar farm? It doesn't make any logic. Either you're going to pass the solar farm.
I just, yeah. 300 acres in Scottsdale would be spot zoning to make it industrial.
Yeah, I don't see a developer coming and spending the time and the money to try to rezone something to I-1 in the middle of a bunch of A-1. I mean, I could see them doing it. Let's say you're in a CPA. I could see them, and there's A-1 in that CPA. I could see that being an avenue or a conversation there.
So the purpose of this conversation is to essentially do what this bill doesn't say we should do, right? Which is to say we're trying to make it basically impossible for you to build, right? Which is effectively what happened in Appomattox.
Or control where they build.
Yes, for now.
No, I'm just saying that's the real purpose, which is against what they're actually trying to do here. Which, let me finish,
yeah.
Creates more demand, which drives up the prices for the solar, which means it's more likely that you're going to see people go in and try to make these applications at that point in time. You know, we have three that are being submitted right now, and that's three in, you know, I think of what we've had a total of 5 and 10 years. So it's not like we're getting flooded by this, and it's not like the process is easy, and it's not as if, you know, every special use permit doesn't give us an opportunity to say what do we want to do with this. So I just don't understand why we're creating this process. And to me, it seems, you know, really, all it is accomplishing exactly what the legislature is saying. We are trying to avoid this because we're not going to meet our goals. And then you may say, well, okay, this is a way of forcing them to do that. But that doesn't solve the actual need for the energy that is being requested by, you know, the growth in AI and being requested by the growth in computers and data centers. So, you know, It's not going to change.
The one thing I'll say is we're getting in deep in depth, like this should be our work session rather than what we're doing right now. And I understand we're talking it out. I understand that. But I think they're just looking for what do we want to come back with in April. And I think this is a discussion we should be having in April.
Okay.
Well, I guess some of the discussion is, one, I mean, do you want us to do anything at this point, or do you want to see what happens with these bills kind of the way they're going through? I mean,
so my question was going to be to Dan. So if we were to say we want to look at what next steps are to go in a direction that DAPMAX did on not having it in A1 and all the other things like setbacks are not necessarily a part of that. What does that look like?
I mean, probably I would say, you know, wait until March 9th to see what Senate Bill 697 does, because it might say you're not, that fails,
can't do that.
Then we're okay, but if it passes, then you're not really allowed to do that. But you can remand it to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission, I mean, meets after March 9th. Say they meet on March 12th. So you can remand it to the Planning Commission to consider it, or you could bring it back to a future board work session to look at a draft ordinance, what it looked like, and then you could remand it to the Planning Commission.
So,
but at some point, you'll have to remand it to the Planning Commission too.
I mean, the board can consider it first and then move to the Planning Commission, or you can have the Planning Commission bring forward a recommendation to the board.
Would it be an ordinance or just a simple CTA?
Same thing as ordinance.
Okay, ordinance. So you could amend the current language to essentially
you'd be amending the county
remove the special use permit from A1, right?
Correct. You'd be amending. Yeah, it would be a county-initiated text amendment.
And so we can get the ball rolling on at least staff beginning to look at that before the bill is voted on, or what was there a companion bill in the House for 697?
No, it was just a Senate bill.
So there was no campaign. Interesting. Okay.
It's in the House now in subcommittee and CCT subcommittee. So
was there a similar bill at all in the House remotely?
The only House bill was the one on SCC.
And that had a companion Senate bill.
And that got carried
out.
Okay.
Okay.
And there's also the argument that I've heard that the clean energy policy would state that banning solar in A1 is not allowed because it's not in compliance with Virginia's clean energy policy. There hadn't been any litigation on that, but that's the argument I've heard, is that totally banning it in A1 violates Virginia's clean energy policy. So there could be a lawsuit at some point in the future for counties that have banned it and certain zoning.
Has any action like that been taken against Appomattox?
Not yet.
And and you may or may not know this, probably don't. And Eric, you too. Since we're talking about doing such might drive up the demand to put it in certain areas, has Appomattox had any applications since they passed this ordinance?
I don't know. We would have to reach out
to their planning director and see if they've received any applications.
My understanding is no, but
that's my understanding too.
The people in Appomattox, I think.
So I guess back to my original question, that we could get to work on looking at something like this while we wait to hear from Richmond on what happens with this Senate bill while it's in crossover, correct?
We could. The next meeting's March 6th, so that'd be, you might know at that point what the House Committee's done with it, because they have to finish by March 9th. So you could bring it back at a work session on March 6th. I don't know if budget, no, it'd be a presentation.
We're not going to have any time for any work sessions
after. So you could do a short presentation March
6th. Am I correct that any pending application that we have right now would not be subject to any change that we make anyhow?
We put what's up to the board if they want the language in there in the ordinance that says pending applications are not subject to this restriction. There'd have to be language in there and the ordinance.
So we'd have to basically grandfather them out.
For pending applications.
Yeah.
They haven't been approved yet, but for pending applications, there would be language in there. Because they haven't been gone through the Planning Commission or work.
Okay, so we're saying the most expedient next step to look at this would be to, again, on the 6th, to do what on the 6th?
You can have a presentation where we can have a draft ordinance.
Right.
And at that point, you'd know most likely what the committee had done at 697. It'd probably be before the whole House, or the House committee would have killed the bill at that point.
I see.
Most likely. Yeah, and then the committees have to finish all their work by March 4th. So you would know what the committee has done with it. It would either be before the House, or would have passed or failed before the House at that point.
So what do you need from us to do that?
You would just need a motion to bring back as a presentation.
I would argue that staff's got a lot to do right now, and this is not going to change anything. We still have the three applications that are coming in. There's no reason to do something today versus 2 months from now, is what I would argue from that standpoint. I mean, we're in the middle of budget season, and they've got plenty to do. I want to speak for you, but it seems to me that it's probably significantly is going to change. We'll know more from what's going to happen with this bill and whether it's even relevant. So it may be that we're asking them to put time and energy into something that is moot at that point because it passes.
I think we covered most of that in waiting until the 6th to get the presentation. I'd say...
Still got to be signed by the governor, I would think, right?
Correct.
If it passes, yes, then you're looking at even a potentially a more delay at that point. What were you getting ready to say?
I was just going to say, staff is saying they can do it. Let's get that next step in place by the 6th. We can make some decisions from there. And I don't want to, if it's something we were going to do, we'll just keep finding reasons and ways to delay it. Yeah. If we can do it now, I'm sorry. If it's something that we want to do, and we can do it now, I don't see it as something that's that needs additional delays.
Yeah, I'm there. I think we can beat a dead horse, but I'm ready to make a motion to direct staff to bring us back a draft ordinance. What is it, the March 6th meeting?
Correct.
for us for further consideration.
So we have a motion by Mr. Goad. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Would that be specifically to not allow the use of utility scale solar, large scale solar in A1? You also want consideration of setbacks,
buffers
for other districts, or you just want?
Right now, to Tony's point, I think getting into buffers and everything would be a little bit much on you guys. Let's just look at the limiting it to I-1 and what it would look like to not have current applicants grandfathered there. I would second that motion.
So we have a motion by Mr. Goad, a second by Mr. Hodge.
Did you say have applicants grandfathered or not applicants?
Not grandfathered.
Not grandfathered.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All against?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes in favor and passes 3-2.
I would ask that you please reach out to the guys from Lancaster and talk to Jason.
Yeah.
If y'all will do that individually. I'm not saying I want it everywhere. I don't. Okay? But we can't just have one idea that we go with.
Correct.
Please look at more than just one plan.
Yeah, I'll definitely call.
Could we also at this time remand to the Planning Commission setbacks for them to begin research? Would that
definitely
be allowed?
I think there need to be more than what they were read tonight.
Now, does it have to be that they propose to us what they are?
So there's two options. Basically, either the Board or Planning Commission has to have a resolution to initiate a text amendment in the zoning case. So either the board can pass a resolution, and I could have that at the next meeting, or the Planning Commission can pass. That's what the last two text amendments the Planning Commission has considered. The Planning Commission passed a resolution. But the board can do it as well. I would just need to draft the resolution. So it'd be, but I could have that for the board's packet for March 6th if you want to consider sending it to the Planning Commission.
Yeah, send it to them to do the research and engage with the citizens. So somehow set up a forum or whatever community meeting and talk to them and see what the citizens feel is the best way.
Excuse me.
Ultimately, we represent the citizens, but before I made a decision whether 100 or 400 is the right amount, I would want to hear from the citizens.
Yep, I agree.
Otherwise, we're going to have a cascade of them here, and we'll be here to midnight one night listening and being upset. over cutting down hardwood and setbacks and et cetera, so forth. I witnessed it for the past 12 months.
Well, if you pass industrial, you don't have to worry about it. It's not going to happen. So you're kind of wasting and spinning wheels there, too. The purpose of the industrial is, let's be clear and honest, is to make sure nobody applies in Flavanna County. So if nobody's going to apply in Flavanna County, then why are we wasting time of the Planning Commission to do this? I mean, that's just, let's be honest. That's what it's about. So,
A lot of things happened that we didn't anticipate when the legislature passed this whole energy or green thing just a few years ago. We didn't contemplate that we'd be faced with them mandating what we can do with our rights here.
I think you get more mandating coming due to clean energy.
We had a huge argument about Second Amendment rights.
Yes.
And we came up and stood up against it. We can pass things right now. That may make a hill of beans. That lets them know how we feel.
Yeah.
But if they pass it, we have to abide by it.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan was very clear. I agree with you 100%, but I think it also, like you said, we didn't just say let's not have the Second Amendment resolution and pass it. I mean, he took a vote, sent a message. We've done the same thing on the solar resolution. So I think it's important, I guess.
I agree.
So
I think it's a good comparison.
Yeah, very good comparison.
I mean, but we could argue all night over this. And
just to be clear, you want the Planning Commission,
we need a motion that you want me to bring back a resolution for the Planning Commission to consider a text amendment to address the solar ordinance rights, solar regulations, buffers and setbacks.
Buffers and setbacks.
So if you want to state that motion.
What he said, I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
I have a motion made by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. Goode. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Hodge. I got to separate you two.
Say it again.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody against?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 4-1?
So was the last 20 minutes.
All right. Moving on. We have action matters, item C, fiscal year 24 CIP additional funding request, CAR 1 and CAR 30, Ms. Melton and Dwayne Mayo.
Y'all just need to see Tori, that's all.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So tonight we are here to request additional funding for the FY24 CIP for the funding of CAR 1 and CAR 30. In the FY22 CIP budget, $74.5 was approved for CAR 1, which is the chief's car, and in FY23, $86,000 was approved for CAR 30 and Kim's store. And as you can see, this just gives you some breakdowns of CAR 1 and CAR 30 with the funding and what the cost is coming in at and what additional funding we're going to need. Next slide. So the current lowest cost that's coming in is $110,241 for both vehicles. Chief 1 will include $30,000 from his budget to offset some of that cost, but it's going to require additional funding from the board for $29,982 to purchase both vehicles.
And this really just kind of shows that, again, showing what the board approved, what the costs for both of them, and again, they're looking at getting basically identical.
Correct. Yes.
Identical vehicles, and you can see
there's an example.
The 30
easier for them to be able to use.
Yeah, and so this is just an example of this is a 2022 Ford Expedition SSV, but yep. I think yours it's a 2024.
It's a
2024. Yeah, I mean, so that's similar to what it would look like, and 110 is fully outlook, fully equipped with all the inboxes,
lights, sirens,
lights,
logos, and everything.
Correct.
And basically, when they pull up to a scene, guys, they can pick up that back gate on that truck and then pull out their board that they keep track of each fireman and where they are. And
with the radios back there.
Extra radios, all of the above. And this is the same type of deal that we've had to deal with. And we've had to wait 2 years to buy vehicles. The price goes up.
And just trying to get the vehicles has been a challenge as well.
Absolutely.
So the replacement, why are we replacing the ones that are there?
The 2008 Expedition has 133,000 rocker panels are rusting out of it. I just had window controls for the front to be repaired so that they would work.
Just mechanical?
Yes, sir.
It's getting what you talked about before. When it starts costing enough money to, what was it you said, 20% of?
It was, well, what Ford gave us was, as a general rule, 25% within a year of replacement cost and spend in, not in maintenance, but in repair.
Right. So when, like I said, in 21, with COVID, when I went to replace it, the vehicle was not available. So we've just been fighting that battle ever since.
And the mileage is only part of the story. The vehicle sit idling during its lives.
Correct.
So the engine's running, but not accruing miles.
Yeah, as soon as you hit the key, it doesn't, I don't cut it off until it sits in the driveway.
No. Otherwise, his equipment and the lights and scene lights would drain the battery in no time.
What scene, what year is car 30?
2009. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, they're both.
2007.
Seven. Probably just
2007, so it's getting close to 20 years of service. Were we talking about trying to make that into a vehicle we can use to maneuver people?
So, and how many miles are on that?
47,000 on car 30.
I'm sorry, how much?
47,000. The county did not purchase car 30.
I was going
to. The company did in 2007. And this, I heard someone say this was a replacement. Car 30 is not a replacement to car 30. This is an additional vehicle.
It will be, that's why
we will continue to use the existing one for hopefully another 10 years if we can.
Many of the companies have vehicles that the firemen show up to the building rather than driving their personal vehicles. They have a smaller vehicle they can drive if they're not. You have to be a POV operator.
Not just that, but also, before we make any commitments like that, I'm still working with Mr. True, as I mentioned earlier. We're not going to change anything to car 30, the current one, the 2007 model, until you all vote on what staffing looks like for the future in Kent Store. My thought is if we change anything before, there may be one, two, or maybe even more county staff members in our firehouse, I want them to be able to use that rather, for the same purposes as you all are using the ALS-1 vehicle now, Palmyra Rescue. So I don't want to jump on anything and change it. Prior to that discussion, we were going to use it to haul the UTV that you all helped us purchase. We were using it to haul people, equipment. We don't allow people in Kent Store to use their personal vehicles, so we keep it.
They get mad at us.
Yeah, we don't allow that.
If they show up in a driver's
vehicle. Even if my wife brings water to a fire, she has to go to the firehouse and get this vehicle. We have pretty much prohibited personal vehicles. And that the one that we have now is probably the busiest apparatus that we have. It runs 200 calls a year.
This was already, what they're saying is this was already approved.
Yeah.
And they had vehicles to buy. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. They happened to become ALS-1 and the other vehicle, which has been great for our county. But now to replace them now, it's going to cost an additional $30,000 or $29,000 is all they're asking for. So the 70 and the 80 or whatever it was have already been approved. Chief One has got $30,000. Yeah, so it's just $29,000 to buy the vehicles if they can get them.
Well, we can get them.
We
just need the additional.
Yeah.
So I would like to make a motion the board of supervisors approve additional funding for the FY23 CIP Car 1 and Car 30 in the amount of $29,982 with funding to come from unassigned fund balance or I would say board of supervisors contingency fund because I just looked at it. We're like at 120 some thousand, so you put a friend at 100,000.
I'll second on the BOS contingency.
We have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.
All right. Item D, authorization to advertise for a public hearing to amend section 20-1-2.1 And to enact section 20-17 of the county code to give the treasurer discretion for application of tax payments when there is a payment arrangement. Mr. Whitten.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'll be presenting on this, and the treasurer, Mr. Rittenhouse, is here tonight.
I was going to say that this could be our first chance to have Ms. Rittenhouse go to the podium.
If there's any questions, I'll present quickly, and then I'll let her come up and see if there's any questions. I did have a meeting with her, and after she had met with the Louisa County Treasurer, there's a few ordinance changes she had requested, basically to better perform her duties. So the first change is to, again, revisit it.
Would you, let's
see. Top 20 dash.
Oh, I'm sorry, let's do this. There we go. Nope. No, I did the wrong one, I apologize.
Okay, sorry, it's 20-1-2.1. So basically, Virginia Code Section 58.1-3916 states the penalty for failure to pay a tax shall not exceed 10% of the tax past due, or $10, whichever is greater. So the proposed amendment to section 20-1-2.1 would add the required language at the end, provided the penalty shall in no case exceed the amount of tax assessable. And also would strike the language that states, in the case of delinquent potential personal property tax more than 30 days past due, the penalty should be 25% of the tax best to one such tangible personal property or $10. This really is not necessary language, and it is confusing to the citizen because she showed me in 2019 a bill said the penalty is 25%, and then a 2020 bill showed the penalty was 10%. So it's kind of confusing the language. And when we looked at other counties surrounding us, they pretty much all of them had the 10% language or $10. Because $10 is the max. There's really not the necessity for the 25%.
10 is the minimum.
Yeah, $10 is the maximum.
Maximum?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Whichever's greater.
10% or 10.
Right. Whichever's greater. So $10.
The least 10. You pay is $10. Right.
Correct, minimum, not maximum. So if I have a 1,000, it's not a maximum of $10. It's a maximum of
100.
Yeah.
Minimum of
$10. Minimum of
10. Up to 10 or 10%, sorry. Whichever's greater.
So basically, looking at other localities, they didn't have the 25% of the tax best due. They had the 10% of the tax. So, I mean, I guess it was optional language that was included in the code at some point, but most other localities around us did not have that language. So she had requested that we have language similar to Louisa County, where it's 10%. Or $10, whichever is greater. And then it'd be easier on the tax notices to just have one flat 10% fee. I'm not sure how this would affect revenue from the penalty, the 25% for tangible property versus 10% for other property. We haven't done that financial analysis, but this is a request she is bringing to the board. But she can speak more, I guess, if there's any questions about why it's necessary. If she wanted to, or I can go on to the next section if you want me to finish, and then we can come back to her.
Why don't you finish?
Okay. So the other section basically was an amendment to 20-1-7. And basically the Virginia Code Section 58.1-3913 states, unless otherwise provided by the board, any payment of taxes should be credited first against the most delinquent amount. So the proposed code section change to 20-1-7 would give discretion to the treasurer for the application of tax payments when there's a payment arrangement. So basically, if someone's under a payment arrangement and they want to pay their current tax due, they can do that, and they won't incur interest and penalties on their current tax, and they can continue to pay the payment arrangement on the past due taxes that are 3-4 years old. And that was the language that a lot of adjacent localities have. It gives the discretion to the treasurer. And basically, people in a payment arrangement, they're not getting further in a hole. They can pay their current taxes off and not have a penalty and interest.
I'm just saying, because so in other words, something bad happens, like you decide to ride a scooter and break your arm, and you fall behind on your taxes, and the next year it doesn't continue to
not fall into payday lending routine there, more or less.
I guess the only time this would be an issue is if it was near one of the penalty thresholds. Whereas if you let them pay the most recent year, the oldest year can fall off due to the limitations on the length of time you can collect delinquent taxes.
Well, they'd still be paying on their payment arrangement.
provided it didn't fall off, like on real estate, 20 years, you can't collect after it.
So it's 5 years for personal property.
Yeah.
So most payment arrangements, they're only going to allow a 1 year, maybe a 2 year payment arrangement. They're not going to allow a 5 year payment arrangement because you risk the, having to write off.
Yeah.
If it, you know, after 5 years, you have to write, the treasurer has to write it off. So, but she, Ms. Rittenhouse can speak to both ordinances and why she thinks they're.
Ms. Rittenhouse, would you speak to both ordinances?
I think she'd be delighted to have based on the look on her.
She looks excited.
I just love it. Thank you all for having me. Now, the first one that we were talking about with the 25%, I'm not even sure if that was ever even implemented. And I don't even know if Munis calculated that. So in talking to Mr. Wash from Louisa County, and the 25% additional is really steep. It really is. So that was the reason for that. And talking to Mr. Wash from Louisa and looking at different jurisdictions and stuff, they really didn't have that added 25% language. And again, I don't even know that it really was being used. In reference to the other, just as Dan was telling you, it's just one of those situations where if we set up a payment plan for people, we want them to stay on that payment plan, but we also want them to stay current on the ones that's coming up. So this additional ordinance, and I think that the state code allows for this to happen if there is an ordinance for us in our county ordinance to be able to allow me to apply, let them continue to pay. Because if anybody comes in and they give us money, we're required by the code to put it to the most delinquent. This way, if they're on a payment plan, then we can apply their 2023 to their 2023 so they will eventually get out of the hole, is what I'm trying to say. And that's pretty much the base.
Questions?
To be clear, so yeah, I'm on a payment plan, I'm paying $100 a month for back taxes. I still come in and I pay my current taxes of $500 as an example. I'm still gonna pay the $500 plus the $100 at that point in time.
Yes, sir. And hopefully it's more than $100 because you're not going to get out of the hole at $100 a month. Yeah, well,
depends on your personal property.
That's true. That's true. Any other questions?
My cars, I get out of the hole real fast.
That's what I heard.
Okay.
Other questions?
No.
Thank you.
It's very delightful to see to hear from you today.
Thank you.
Toot, the current and former treasurer. The room we're on.
I'll keep asking them if they're going to bring popcorn. This is like watching reality
this
TV.
My idea of retirement.
Hey, this is reality TV right here at its finest. If she can't get this any better on Jerry Springer.
That's right, that's right.
Anybody want to make a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors advertise the amendments to the County Code to amend Section 20-1-2.1 to enact Section 20-1-7 for a public hearing to be held on March 20th, 2024.
I second.
Motion made by Mr. Goad, seconded by the right honorable gentleman from the Palmyra District.
Mr. Hodge.
Mr. Hodge. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Excellent.
Next item E, Virginia Tourism Corporation Marketing Leverage Grant Program. Mrs. Schmidt.
Thank you. You're stealing my thunder.
I've seen them.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you. I'm here tonight to seek approval to apply for a Virginia Tourism Marketing Leverage Grant. As you know, we launched Find Fluvanna back in fall of last year. It was a $60,000 grant, so we got a lot of mileage out of these. So the Virginia Tourism Corporation is a accepting grant applications for their marketing leverage program, and it's just that. It's to leverage our current assets with additional opportunities. With that, this grant is mainly for general marketing to drive visitation to Fluvanna businesses, attractions, or just destinations. So this one is highly competitive, but if awarded, grant funds will be used to continue the Find Fluvanna branding and marketing campaign, focusing specifically on our tourism outreach efforts. This grant requires a one-to-one match for an award up to $20,000. So we spend 20, we get 20. And I laid out how we're going to specifically achieve that $20,000. This year, we're currently have earmarked in the proposed FY25 budget, $7,500. In addition to that, we have a partner contribution from the Arts of Louvana. This is their studio arts tour that's successful, and they're going to extend it to two days this year, which is really exciting. In addition to that, we have currently in our budget to finish up the printing for the Find Louvana guides, $8,500 in the current campaign. So, at a high level, we want to pretty much capture the pre-planned expenses from the current campaign, and then we're going to launch a Find Fall in Louvana campaign. So, really excited about that. And we'll partner to promote the Studio Arts Tour. And our plans specifically includes, again, the Find Fall in Louvana Studio Arts Tour. And with that, they will also receive a new website, a redesign of their logo and their map, as well as a tour passport. And then, of course, our print and digital ads, social media, and everything else that we've been continuing to promote. And then the last one is kind of still in progress right now, but this is how we're laying out the proposal of how we're going to get to the $40,000. So we spend the $20,000, Virginia Tourism Corporation gives us $20,000 back. And that's it. If there's any questions.
Nobody
has questions?
Right.
Love this.
Thank you.
I can tell you right now, I made Mr. O'Brien's night. I showed him a picture of Frisbee Golf, one of the holes.
Yes.
It's in there? Those of you that weren't aware of it.
I've played that course multiple times.
I think that might be
Can I have a special meeting of the course and play?
Hey, look, look, but I will wear my briar pants because I know Mr. Fairchild will get it lost down there in the bushes and I'll have to go down through the briars and get it.
Well, that's because he's playing in the dark.
Because you're playing what?
You're in the dark.
Literally never played frisbee golf.
Me either.
I'm telling you right now, we went over there. We literally went over there when we were in COVID. And we were doing things to do videos to show the parents some of the stuff, the activities there were to do around Louvana. We had the most fun. Oh my gosh. If you ever get a chance to watch that video, you want to laugh.
And keep in mind, I remember you as quarterback.
I throw better spiral with a frisbee than I did with football.
So,
and I don't take home as many headaches from concussions when I.
We're approving her to move. I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
It's not going to cost us anything.
Well,
because she's spending it out of her
budget. But if she applies, then she's going to have to come back and say, and we get it, she's going to have to come back and say, can I have the $20,000?
Well, I mean, so the money, the $20,000, she already kind of has earmarked already there. So this is just allowing the county to apply and then acknowledging that the funds that have been kind of that are proposed in the fiscal year 25 budget and some other areas would be utilized to match that.
I don't think it's going to cost us anything extra, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Just asking for permission to apply for this.
Yes.
I'll make the motion. I move the Board of Supervisors approve an application for the Virginia Tourism Corporation's Marketing Leverage Grant Program for $40,000 to support the Find Louvana Tourism Marketing Campaign.
I'll second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0.
Thank you.
All right.
It's in the gym.
Next is public hearing.
No, we got to go consent agenda. Well, we don't have any public hearings.
No public hearings.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I'll make it. Yeah. You don't believe it, do you?
Number, well, yeah, does anybody want to pull anything from the consent agenda?
Okay. And I will do my salute to Mr. Weaver and find one about $1.50 is where that came from.
We have to make a motion to pass it.
I move we
approve
the consent agenda. I should have let you do that.
And I'll second it.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Trying to talk to you more.
Moving on to unfinished business. Anybody have anything?
No.
Any new business?
I'm sure you have public comment.
Yeah, I had something earlier and I got a.
Really?
yes, maybe it's just a question with Tony. So
my new business was what I brought up earlier. I should have waited until new business to say something about us saying something on behalf of
the fire.
By the way, the reason I keep doing that with public hearing, for some reason when I see that, my mind is saying public comment. So, all right, second round of public comment. We will now open our second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. Anybody wishing to address the board?
Hi, Jason Sweeney, 3456 James Madison. I just wanted to come up and talk a little bit about that Senate Bill 629 and point out, I also am an attorney, I also read that bill, and there was a little nuance I didn't think it got picked up when you guys were discussing that tonight. That particular bill says in that key language that the bill would prevent localities from restricting the size and the density and the total amount of the solar panel, but it didn't talk about location. And I heard you guys talking a lot tonight about looking at different ways to maybe like tweak where you guys would want the panels, this spot versus that spot. And I wanted to point that out. I encourage you guys to read the actual text of that bill, because I don't think most of the stuff you guys talked about tonight would be impacted even if that bill passes. That bill is going to impact people that say no solar. It's going to impact people that say you can't make them bigger than 50 acres. And it's going to impact people that say you can't have more than 100 acres per five, you know, like a density requirement. But you guys were talking a lot about tonight about, hey, you pull over the road, you see them right off the road. Hey, we've got some wineries down the street. They don't want them sitting in the backyard. I think these are all the kind of things that we've been talking about up here. You know, I am not 100% against solar. I just want solar to be in the right place. So I think all those things you guys are talking about, I look forward to the next working session. I've looked at some stuff from other states. I'll try to bring some stuff to the table to help the thought process go through. But I think there's a lot of things, if you guys start pulling the string, where you can look at and think, you know, this is the local place. You guys are closest to the local people. And when we're trying to make the decisions about where this stuff goes, there's a lot of good considerations we can put on the table for that consideration. You guys have a lot of tools at your disposal, including tweaking the amount of taxes in different districts and certain requirements for certain types of zoning, certain kinds of special permits. You can change that kind of stuff around to try to nudge these projects where y'all think is going to be the best place for them to be based on our community. So I look forward to the discussions. I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Mario Kuhar, Scottsville, Virginia. I just want to talk about the big picture. Everyone talks about solar. And what's amazing to me is no one asks the right question. And I've written to Senator Deeds. So solar and wind are useless. They don't support the grid. They stress the grid. They make it unreliable. If you know how energy works, a power plant doesn't want solar, all right? It impacts the grid. It destabilizes it. So when we had the individual here that showed the Lazard thing, he said the electricity is cheap. So I've written to him. I've written to the other solar companies. I said, all right, show me the calculations. They can't show me that because it's not true. And Europe is a great classical situation right now. They're falling apart. Their countries are deindustrializing themselves. So you look at Germany, the highest cost of energy, and now they don't have any money because they wasted all their money on solar and wind. So they're bringing in gas power plants. They're turning on their coal plants. One of the things that we need to look at is that the Virginia Clean Economy Act, no one asked the question, well, how much is this going to reduce our CO2? Everyone nods their heads, hey, this is clean energy, but it's not. When you look at the life cycle of how they gather, you know, solar, they mine everything, and then they process everything with fossil fuels. So if you look at the CO2 levels, the global CO2 levels that are measured, there's like six places around the world that are being measured, one's in Maui, another one's in Spain, one's in Australia. Those CO2 levels are going up, all right? I'm not going to discuss why, I know the reason why. But the thing is, all this money is being spent to reduce CO2. Well, none of these solar companies are providing you CO2 calculations. I've asked for them. They won't do it. And they're not legit if they can't do it. That should be a simple calculation. They should be able to provide us that in one day. And that's because they're not reducing or removing CO2. So this is a situation where we can, as a county, say, all right, if this bill passes, let's say, you guys need to look at this as a business. I know how it works. I work for a data center company. I've installed data centers throughout the world. I know how the power works. I know how much money they have. We can put fees on these solar companies because they're making the money off the subsidies. There's money there. And then our electricity costs go up. If you look at the Virginia plan, electricity plan that Yongbin put out, and I'll share that with you, I'll send you an email. They said, hey, this is going to be unreliable. And even Dominion says this is going to increase our electricity cost by $500 a year. That's a big chunk every year, especially in this county for Virginia citizens. So you need to look at that and say, all right, we need to treat this as a business. What can we do? As Mr. Sweeney indicated, let's look at some fees. Let's put some fees on this. Let's get some money back. We're paying for the Inflation Reduction Act. That's taxes, and then we're paying for the increase in electricity costs. Well, let's get some of that back for the Virginia citizens. When someone puts a solar field in here, it impacts all of us because our electricity prices go up. So what can we do to help everyone in this county, not only in this county, but Virginia? I'm for nuclear, all right? I'm a Navy guy, submarine and whatnot. That stuff is safe. That's the smartest thing we can do, is just eliminate solar and wind because they're useless, they're pointless, they don't do anything for energy, they put stress on energy. Let's get nuclear, small footprint. 1 gigawatt of a nuclear plant, like the one in California, Diablo Canyon, it takes 1.3 square miles. To do solar is 367 square miles, and that's not apples to apples because, as you all know, solar is intermittent, so it's not 24/7. Solar is inefficient. The capacity is only 27% at max, you know, anywhere around the world. It just, that's, if anyone looks at this logically and say, we're going to spend all these money, we're only going to get 27%, it's like a baseball player. You guys always talk sports. You know, 300 is great, all right? 27%, that stinks. If you look at the capacity, including in the Virginia Clean Economy Act, solar and wind are down here, nuclear up here, hydro up here, coal up here, you know, gas up here. That's the lowest and worst type of technology. These are wrong technologies. So let's try to figure out what we can do if the solar companies come in here. How can we help Virginia citizens? You know, get the fees in there. We'll get our money back and help the Virginia citizens. All right, thank you.
Anybody else?
Hi, Jeff Potter at 474 Covered Bridge Road, also known as across the street from Mike. Just wanted to say thanks to the board for approving the gap funding for Kentstor and for the car. And secondly, now that Supervisor Good and Supervisor Hodge are here, to make the request again to have the meetings on webinars so that people can participate remotely. I know there are concerns about people and content that was shown previously, and there's ways to control that. So being closer, getting feedback from your constituents, I think is really important, and just implore you guys to explore that option. I work in Richmond every day. It's hard for me to get here to make comments, as y'all might not know, because I came in at 7:30. So that's when I can get here, but it's nice to be able to hear it online and be able to participate, especially when there's questions about stuff. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Anybody else? That's my name. I'm not with the pistol.
I'll say to the board, it is true that with all these different bills, I have gotten confused over the past weeks of which solar bill was putting what restrictions on and so on. I meant to mention earlier, you know, you talked about Farm Bureau. If we had another, a third session, being one of the speakers, Farm Bureau put out an action alert, solar action alert number 3, asked the delegates to vote no on SB 697, which is still alive.
At the board's pleasure, could I ask Mr. Dahl, could you ask Mr. Notman and his two fine IT technicians to look if there's a way that we can allow those public comments via Zoom securely? If he knows of a way to do it, could he come back to us? If it can't be done, I understand.
When I was at the General Assembly like 2 weeks ago, they had public comment.
Yeah.
And so there's,
I'm sure there's a way to secure it.
I will suggest one thing, and I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I know a fellow that's an IT guy for a big company in Richmond. He might be sitting out there laughing right now.
Yeah.
He might have just talked to us. So yeah, it might get him to get in touch with Mr. Notman and see if they, between the two of them, can figure something out.
If there's a way we can do this, this would please Mr. Schoenster, and it would please Mr. Potter. And if it makes it easier for our constituents to reach out to us or provide comments, I don't see what it hurts. We pay for the service anyways.
Do you want us to bring that back to you within the next couple meetings or any time frame?
I would say, unless you guys object, if it's possible, why don't we just do this?
I don't object.
Just do what?
I don't object.
Allow it if it can be done securely.
I would just say that we're out of order in terms of the agenda, which
correct.
Yeah.
And not in the benefit of the public is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because there may have been people that have already left because we didn't have that advertised. So I don't have any objection per se. But just,
so we just need to bring it up in the next meeting?
Yeah.
I don't think you have to. It's already been brought up. I just say
we'll look into it.
We don't want to make a practice of doing new business.
Feasibility and then bring it as new business, please.
All righty then. All right. That's all we got. Anybody want to make a...
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Mr. Sheridan.
They're all over that.
Mr. Goode,
may I second? Was waiting on.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? Chair votes no, passes 4-1.